What's up, man? Happy Friday. How we doing, man? What's going on, Coop? Fix my.
What's going on?
I'm good, man. It's another busy day, man. We had a whole bunch of stuff planned to speak about, and we ended up just kind of going with what the fans wanted us to do, and we're going to do a mock versus of Outkast and Mobb Deep. So
I was chosen to do Outkast.
Go ahead.
So I was at the Falcons game last night, Mike.
Uh-huh.
Go Braves.
Man, you know, it is what it is, man. Like, I'm from Atlanta. I root for Atlanta teams. Always going to be a Braves fan, Hawks fan. But with the Falcons, you got to give people a reason to want to back what you got going on. And the fact that the Falcons refuse to hold Matt Ryan accountable for anything, or won't even get a backup who we know would possibly make him work and know that his spot is threatened. It's like, man, I can't sit here and root for something that ain't even trying to win.
I mean, Mike, it wasn't even no mid. There was like sticks and stems on the field last night. Like, that was bad.
And the Patriots ain't even a good team like that. You know what I'm saying? They got a rookie quarterback. You go out there and get blown out by a rookie quarterback. I don't care what we got on the field. I blame Matt Ryan. If you are that guy, certain things just shouldn't be happening. You getting shut out?
Shut out at home.
You know.
Mike, I got invited. If I would have paid for a seat to see that last night,
You froze up, man. But I'm sure you're going to get back in. I think it's probably a signal issue. But yeah, man, we got a whole lot to talk about today, man. First things first, rest in peace, Young Dolph.
Yeah.
Cool. Hang up and hit me back, man, because, you know, I want to make sure you're clear here. I don't want to start the show off with us pausing. So,
yeah, that's cool. I'll hit you right back.
Want to welcome everybody into the room. Yeah, today, man, we are going to be talking about the Snoop album, Algorithm. We're going to do the mock verses that we were telling you guys, well, that you guys are telling us that you wanted last week, and Outkast and Mobb Deep. I'm taking on 20 Outkast records, and Coop is going to be taking on 20 Mobb Deep records. Let me go ahead and get Coop back in the room, too. There he is. He's taking me back. All right, let's see. Make sure you're in motion. Yeah, you're good now. But yes, RIP Young Dolph, man. And whole lot circulating around that. You know, everybody comes to the internet with their speculations and all that. And, you know, I don't want to even get into any of those things, but I know we were on live the other day, and while it was happening, and I got a notification, or I got a text message from my homie. It was like, you know, then it got off. And I was like, dang. I always hate having to report that stuff. You know what I'm saying? And I remember the first time that I think I really had to report something like that was with XXX, Tentacion. And I know it was reported that he had gotten shot. I was hoping that he pulled through, and he didn't. You know, you just remember where you're at during those moments. And same thing with Nipsey. When I got notified of that and I had to report that, actually, it was a similar situation where it was a shooting at the Marathon store, and someone was dead. They didn't identify who was dead yet. And it was, you know, people in our comment section saying that, you know, they had talked to a promoter that's close to this, this, and this. So we were learning those things kind of before it was, you know, officially reported. And I just hate hearing about those. That's like the lowest part of the journalism sphere, having to report that stuff. And I don't know, man. It's unfortunate, man. It seems to be one of those things that's just singular to hip-hop artists. Is that fair to say?
So, you know, I was on a thread with one of my friends, and he said something that really struck me and stayed with me. He said, being a rapper is like, he's like, I don't know why anybody would even want to be a rapper anymore. He's like, it's so dangerous to be out here and to live this lifestyle this way. He's like, niggas just keep getting clipped off.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, I think that Yes, maybe a certain type of rap music, because honestly, a certain type of rap music and imagery is definitely unique in its own in all genres. Like, nobody's out here trying to gun down Lauryn Hill and the Fugees, you know what I mean? And another great group that we're talking about, Outkast, right? Like, Big Boy can go any and everywhere he wants to and always has been able to do so. And, you know what I'm saying, is the biggest thing in the world, you know what I mean? And so I think it's a content thing. I mean, I hate to say it like that, and it's not faulting anybody, because obviously people are speaking on the ills of their environment and things that their environment reflects and things they see. But I think it's all of the promotion and the vibrato around it that creates that type of energy. You know what I mean?
No, Mike, all of those things that you were saying are incorrect. I don't want you to come off like you're being insensitive to the situation and what happened, because the things that you're saying are correct. So let's go ahead and get all those
For real, rest in peace. No, I don't want to come across as that easy.
I just don't want anybody watching this that may like jump in to take it that way. So like, right, I just want to clarify it to make sure that that's not even going to be an issue at all.
Right.
But here's what I do want to say is that, you know, there's just a line with certain things, Mike. Like, I think back to something that a friend of mine that she told me in high school, and she was like, you know, Coop, a real man resolves his differences with his words and with his hands. And so when I see the manner in which this happened, I think that's the part that really like strikes a nerve too, kind of in the same manner that it did with Nip. It's like, dude was probably going to get cookies for his kids.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so it's like, well, you know, if you got a problem like that, and he's putting himself in a circumstance like that, it's like, I mean, Mike, you know me, if I got a problem with somebody, like, and I see them, like, I'm going to say something to them. Like, I'm not going, you know what I mean?
But, you know, and like so you I said, guess, as adults, and not to, you know, cut you off or anything, but as adults and as grown men, should be able to settle your differences in a whole nother way. And if you just don't rock with somebody, stay away from them. You know what I'm saying? Like, coming to get somebody, I mean, that's something different, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, and it's like you were saying, and I know I was like offline for a minute, but when I jumped back in, you were speaking to like just speculation. And that's one of the unfortunate things about when something like this happens, is because of the bravado and because of the things that you speak of and the portrayal and this, that, and the third, just the speculation of it just, you know, rages such a fire. And, you know, the media has to be careful as to not to contribute to fanning those flames, because right. In this community, we've been guilty of that as well. So it's like we have to be mindful, like two wrongs don't make anything right. And so the media needs to be mindful of all the speculative things being said right now until there's some clarity,
and really
need to be mindful of the fact of, like, you know, let's focus on Dolphin, the fact that, you know, if I'm not mistaken, did he own all his publishing? If I'm not mistaken, he owned most of, if not all, his publishing.
Well, I don't know anything about that, because, again, it's, you know, even with him and Soulja Boy, that whole back and forth with them was based on, you know, some silly stuff where Soulja was saying that he was an independent artist, or, you know, or Dolph said he was an independent artist. And Soulja Boy said, no, you signed the Empire Records and this and that. And, you know, Empire is distributed through Universal. So, I mean, regardless, you know, these are people providing for their families, you know.
I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that he doesn't own his publishing, though.
Yeah. You know, the publishing conversation is always murky. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
People are saying,
because right, even, what I'm saying. Even, that's actually even kind of recent, like a separate thing.
Yeah. Even recently, where Ashanti was out there saying that she owns her masters and has to re-record. It's like, no, that's not really what it is, but, you know, it's, you own the re-recordings of it, or you're able to re-record your original recordings after a certain duration, but the ones that you own, are the new versions of your re-recorded originals. But yeah, again, all that stuff gets murky. So I don't know what, you know, Dolph owned in that way, but I heard he, again, internet stuff, and you know, nothing's verifiable, but you know, I heard he owned like 100 properties out there in Memphis. But regardless, I agree with what you're saying. Like, we just have to watch ourselves, and the fact that, you know, people get so excited by music, like songs like 100 Shots and stuff like that, that the vibrato starts to spill over into other people who might not have anything to do with anything, but their names get brought up. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, let's sit there and let, you know, the situation, you know, materialize before we speak on those things. But one thing is, I mean, even with the Breakfast Club interview that Soulja Boy did a week or so ago, it's like, when people get all riled up and going at folks and stuff, we're entertained by it, but it needs to be, you know, simmered down in a way that, you know, nobody is, you know, put in a bad situation, or it doesn't incite other people who have nothing to do with anything to want to interact in that way. You know what I mean?
No. I totally get you.
Shout out to Miss Amila. She sent us a super chat for 4 euros and 49 cents. She said, "That's the best. This is the best hip hop podcast show. Keep up the great work. Will your yearbook include a dedication to those who passed?" Definitely. You know, we did that in the previous yearbook, the 2020 yearbook. Y'all can go check that out on Amazon. But yes, we'll definitely do a dedication to the people we lost in 2021. Go ahead, Coop. I'm sorry. You were about to say something.
No. I mean, I just think about like all the things that can be done to prevent situations like this when situations like this occur. So it's just sad to me overall.
Yeah.
I don't have too many words about it. And I really don't want to say too much because we don't know too much other than what we've seen. And what we've seen has all just been unfortunate and sad, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things, though, like we were saying offline, or like I was saying offline. I mean, you learn from history, right? And I think that, again, the media and vibrato and what we do here is very important. And, you know, the information that people get, misinformation that people might get, or just the, again, vibrato that is, you know, echoed through this thing. I always think when it comes to Big and how he handled, you know, certain things after, you know, Tupac was murdered, it was like, I think Big could have moved a little different, and, you know, it could have possibly been a different outcome. You know, just some of the raps that was on Life After Death, the going back to Cali stuff, you know. I mean, not everybody took that well. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, but that's what I mean is it like, you know, but when you're being fueled by your team, when you're being fueled by the media, mm-hmm. you know, like the shit literally can get out of your hands to a degree, you know, and people don't understand, like, you know, man, I tell people impartation is like a strong thing. Like you can be the strongest person in the world. But like when you're around it, when you're living it, when people are telling you that you should live it, when everybody like is bigging you up, it can take a hold. Yeah. It's real.
I mean, because I remember being, you know, younger, being a kid, basically, and Tupac would always talk about, man, it's the media. And looking back on it, I see exactly what he was saying. Like, you know, he was like, look, this is just a problem between me and another person, not a coast and a whole other coast. The media fueled that, you know, and they took a lot of his vibrato and, you know, rightfully so, some of his individual anger and made everybody feel that way, the way it was portrayed. And those are the things that, again, especially since we have a clearer line of communication now with the internet, those are things that we need to prevent from happening. And you know, it was just certain stories that were out there that weren't verified, that whoever is out here spreading that knew it wasn't true is willing to spread this that could cause more issues. And I think that's not cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's never cool when it goes down like that.
No. So, but yeah, rest in peace, Young Dolph. And, you know, it's
And this is what I mean about how, and look how quick it turns. Like, Soulja Boy was on, what was it? What was he on, Mike?
He was on the Breakfast Club last week.
Yeah. And he made some comments, yeah. You know, that were a little unsavory at the time. And I mean, you and I mean, and you, and it's not like, and you rarely get upset about anything, Mike, but you know what I mean? You were kind of like, yo, like they kind of like agged into that. Like you said it before Dolph's anything even happened to Dolph, Mike, yeah. You didn't like it. You was like, I don't like how they kind of like play that up. Like, it's cool to talk about that, man. You know, like,
yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, Soulja Boy,
and now all of a sudden the media wants to respond and Soulja Boy's like off this ticket. And it's like, oh, no. Literally a week ago, it was okay.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, to talk about violence, to talk about violence and make light of violence and all that stuff is cool in hip hop and in hip hop media and hip hop spaces until something happens for real.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like literally until something happened next week. You know what I mean? And then it's like, well, no, don't. I mean, because here's the thing about it. It's not like you can try to show, like, contrition now. Like, we know how you really feel about it.
I give Charlamagne credit on that Breakfast Club interview. He did say, like, look, man, we don't need all of that. You know what I'm saying? And Angela Yee did, too. I know DJ Envy was the one to ask him, like, yo, you would, what's your issue with Dolph? So I guess, you know, with Soulja being on their, Soulja Boy being on their program, they had him on there. Because Kanye was on Drink Champs, right? So that's why he was on.
Right.
And so they were just going down the line of everybody he had an issue with and, you know, his rants and all that stuff. And so, you know, when he said his stuff about, you know, Young Dolph getting shot and all that, and it was like, okay, I mean, it was like, we don't need that, but it was kind of like, you know, this is what we got you here for, is this kind of energy anyway. You know what I mean?
But this is what I mean about how it gets funny with the media real quick is that, okay, so let's look at Soulja Boy right quick and unpack that. He's more known for going on these types of shows and making these wild sentiments true or untrue than he is even for his music now, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's the media that has fed in and fueled that character, though, now, haven't they?
If he were to get on their program and give a regular interview with none of these hot takes or anything like that, they would be disappointed.
Asked to do the interview.
Yes.
No, he wouldn't even be asked to do the interview, Mike. He wouldn't even be there. And that's what I'm saying about how the media fuels certain things. So you even have to look at his behavior and his mannerisms and understand how he's fueled by the media to do that because of how they respond in kind and bring them on their shows continually, even though he really hasn't made any notable music in some time.
You know,
and he's a music artist. And it's a music station.
Exactly. Well, you know what? Honestly, let's keep it 100. And, you know, and I say this respectfully, and I think everybody knows this. The Breakfast Club built their following off of gossip and off of, you know, having edgy interviews and things like that. So Soulja Boy is basically the prototype for how they built their following in their fan base in the first place. They've never been a music show, right? They play
mostly
music.
Interview musical artists, though.
They've interviewed musical artists.
Are they like a culture show? Is it a culture piece?
Yeah, and I guess as the show has gotten older, they've tried to make it evolve into this political commentary too, which is wild. But the root of the Breakfast Club is gossip.
But in the core of the culture piece, like the hip hop community and music, though,
it is. It is. So like even artists that whose music they're not gonna play or don't even really have music out there like that, they're gonna interview. They don't play not Iggy Azalea, Azalea Banks music like that, but they know she be saying wild stuff. She turns up, so they have her on the show. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I mean. So the media fuels her to do that. You know what I mean? So she spends more time focusing on that personality than on the craft of making music because of the media.
Well, I mean, Charlamagne now, I haven't even seen his talk show, but, you know, he's in the midst of rebranding himself as more of more of a positive figure. It kind of started with the whole mental health and everything that he jumped on with that. And he did this beautiful diatribe about, you know, what happened to Young Dolph and his Donkey of the Day thing. He gave the two people or the people involved in Young Dolph's murder Donkey of the Day. And he said a lot of great things about the community and hurt people hurting people and, you know, all of these things. But it's like, I at no point in that 8 minute diatribe did he sit there and say, you know, we as journalists, we have a responsibility too. Because honestly, let's keep it real. This is how people actually see these artists when they're on your station. And I don't even want to go to, like, the music's the music, but they do hour and a half interviews with people and these people say so much stuff. And so, like you said, I mean, there's a responsibility that comes with that. And they had that responsibility really a week ago.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The responsibility didn't change, but your tone and your behavior did.
Yeah, and again, like I said, I will give him credit. Him and Angela Yee was like, yeah, we don't need that, whatever, whatever, and they moved on. But still.
But it's the overall, so it's overall a spectrum that you create.
Exactly. It's the energy.
People, yeah, it's, well, I mean, I didn't want to use the term energy, but I guess that would be the quickest way to cut through it, Mike. It's the energy that you create within the spectrum that, that you've created in that media outlet. You know what I mean? Yeah. That you take part of in this. Yeah. And I mean, and everybody has a part that they play. Like, everybody's not going to be, I guess, you know, for the culture, like people say that we are. Like, so, I mean, there's going to be gossip, Mike. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
And there's, like, a market, like, for that in a healthy way, you know? But talking, yeah, like, about people getting shot and stuff is not healthy.
You know, but here's what I'm saying, too. Like, and we have to be more mindful of it in this sphere, just because it's like, oh, well, you know where a lot of these dudes is coming from. Mike, you've been to Memphis before.
Yeah.
You know what Memphis is like. I've been to Memphis a couple times in the last couple years. You know what I'm saying? My nephew's up in Memphis. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what type of environment a lot of these, you know, these black men and women are coming from and the type of people who are around them. And if we're going to be, you know, in the media spectrum and portraying these guys' lifestyle, we have to be mindful of how we portray it because of everything that comes with it. And we know what the everything is. And so, yeah, there's a responsibility because it's not like we don't know.
Yeah. And there's a responsibility to act on these things before anything happens. You know, we love diss records. We even talk about the best diss records and all that. But, I mean, we were just talking about the Pusha T and Drake last week. That wasn't going to any of those points. It's just like, you know, what MC is better in, you know what I'm saying, which sphere than the other, or who came with the better record and all that. But sometimes when it comes to, you know what I'm saying, certain sectors of hip hop or certain sectors of the subgenre, it ain't even about rap skills at that point. It's about something else. And that's when you don't fan those flames, you know?
Hey, Mike, I can't remember who it was. Pusha T did an interview a few years ago. And it was either, I think it was either Baby Wayne or Drake, but he was on an elevator with one of them while they were, like, going to the same event.
I think he said was it was like, Birdman, no, I believe, yeah.
I think it was Baby. I wanted to say it was Baby. He was like, yeah, we were just on the elevator together. They were like, what? He was like, yeah. He was like, don't be believing this, like, you know, this circus shit that you see pretty much. You know what I'm saying?
But see, that's the thing, though, Coop. What do people think this is? You know what I'm saying? Like, people look at this stuff from their lens like it's a movie or something. Like you're watching Power or something. You know what I mean? And it's not. You know what I'm saying? These are real life people doing real jobs. They go to the studio, they perform. And you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what people think this is. Like, you think that when another grown man, these guys are like literally in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. You think that when they see these people in public, they're just going to start swinging on them or something? What do you think is going to happen? Like, you think a big shootout's going to happen or something?
So here's the thing about it, and that's what I mean, is that, like, I think some people think it's like, you understand these guys are living a lot of the time, like, the way that you live, just more financially well off in terms of day-to-day things that they have to do sometimes. It's like, that's what I mean is, like, sad about the Dolph situation. It's like, Mike, you know I got a kid. You know how many times I ran out to grab my kid, like something sweet, right quick. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Be like, hey, you want to go run and get some ice cream? Like, Mike, the first thing that I thought when they was like, he's going to get some cookies, I'm thinking, thank God his kids didn't go with him.
No, for real, for real. Yeah, that's...
For real, for real.
That's sad, man. But you know what? I think my favorite Dolph Saw might have been preached, but I mean, I'm biased to that whole I'm the Man kind of remake that he did. Get Paid was my shit too.
He's done a lot of stuff, and he meant something to a generation that was younger than us.
He was the next generation of Memphis, and you know I fuck with Memphis rappers like all day.
Of
like,
course you do.
Yeah.
I already know how you feel about Memphis rappers.
But yeah, so he was kind of like that next wave of it, and
he was the next wave of it.
Yeah,
I think he was the one. I think he was the one up from the next generation of a crop of a rap artists that came out of Memphis that stood out the most, definitely.
Right, because 3-6 is so. 3-6 is so, you know, I guess they're kind of like the outcasts of that city. Not outcasts in that sense, but like outcasts is to Atlanta. But Memphis still got Skinny Pimp. Memphis still got Playa Fly. And I'm going way back with this, but even in like, you know, current generation. Playa Fly is a legend. But yeah, it's just so much that Memphis has, and each generation they were kind of able to take that Memphis thing and do their own thing with it. But yeah, I think he was a big part of a whole nother wave of that. Because I think Yo Gotti kind of is that middle piece, right? Like, he's that middle piece.
He's
after
the connecting,
three.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's that connecting.
He's the transitional guy after 3-6. And then, like, Dolph is the next guy. But Gotti kind of made himself into his own thing, too, where it's like he's Memphis, but he kind of put himself all over the map in a really like a good way.
In a Rick
way.
Ross-ish like, kind of way, you know, like Rick Ross did with Miami.
He spread himself around more so, I think, than any other Memphis rapper that came before him and kind of showed the next generation how to navigate the waters but kind of keep the sound alive.
Definitely, man. Speaking of performers and just hip-hop being a job, I saw a statement that Chuck D put out today. He actually posted that early this morning. And he was speaking in defense of Travis Scott and the fact that Travis Scott's getting like all the blame for this Astro World Fest. Let me go to what he had to say real quick. So Chuck D posted on his Instagram. He said, "I cannot believe we're at this point where I got to say this out loud. Travis Scott is a performer, an act, not a concert promoter. He doesn't run the sound or the venue or the festival or their staff. He doesn't build the stage or coordinate logistics. He's not an expert in crowd control or security or emergency medical services, but he does trust Live Nation and all the other concert promoters who are supposed to do all of this. And yet here we are, 10 deaths and counting, 10 broken families. The world is mourning. I'm tired of these corporations shucking their most crucial responsibilities. These folks simply say rest in peace and move on. This negligence can't continue. Folks want answers. I'm not buying the young black man did it. He's being blamed for a crime while the old white men run up the corpse that Travis and his fans trusted with their lives. Stay quiet in the shadows, counting their money and watching their stock prices go up and up. The excuse of Travis's irresponsible actions don't wash. If this act had a history of that behavior, why promote him in these bigger venues? Why partner with him in the first place? And let him headline bigger audiences. Live Nation controls the show. They control almost all of the concert venues. Artists ain't speaking out because these same cats already bought by these corporations. No one can say a word against them unless they want to be blacklisted and hurt their careers. So I'm calling out Michael Rapinoe's entire team at Live Nation and the consortium of all the major concert promoters out there to do the right thing, to step up and step out of the shadows and fix this situation and save lives. To stop letting the young black man take the blame, the hate, the fall. We don't know everything that happened or exactly what failed, but concert promoters have a power to make the changes to keep everyone safe and alive. Live Nation, your stock is up. The white corporate music business keeps cashing in on black pain, trauma, and death. This has to stop yesterday. You're a part of the problem. Grow the fuck up. Fix this and let us all live in peace." It's a lot to unpack there.
Woo.
He said a lot, you know, and a lot of good things. And it's interesting, man. A lot of people don't even they weren't agreeing with the statement. I don't know if people just didn't read it or what, but you know, when you see too many words on an internet post, people just don't read it.
I mean, you know, intelligence is very problematic, Mike. You know that, right? You know?
Yeah, man. You know, yeah. They don't read. All right. This is what I got to say about it, man. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I was telling you. Go ahead. Please, let me hear your thoughts.
It really stood out to me when he was talking about corporations capitalizing off of Black trauma, pain, and death, and all of that. I think that could go to all sectors of the music. And I think we've always felt like that about the actual recordings. But the fact that we're seeing this happen in live performances now, I think is wild. I think it's wild that, and we're going to get to this later, because of this Astrofest, Drake was able to pull a record that he had with French Montana. Like, this is a trickling down effect. Like, you're getting to the point where you could just pull people off of concerts. Like, Soulja Boy just got pulled off of the Millennium Tour because Young Dolph's shooting. And it's one of those things where I was listening to another podcast where they were breaking down all the logistics of the trickle-down effect that this Astrofest situation could have, like on an insurance level with hip-hop concerts. You know, the lawsuits that are coming down the line when it comes to Travis being sued. Now, is this going to put him in a financial situation where the label comes back and says, you know what, we got a new deal for you, tie you in again, you know what I mean? Kind of like refinancing your home, where it's like, okay, you want us to take care of these lawsuits? Sign your name on the dotted line type thing. This is a whole nother level of control to the point where we're seeing in the media that one individual could be blamed for all of this. When one individual there was nothing that Travis could have done in that situation. First of all, he trusts the venue and the promoters and the security and all that staff to cut his mic or whatever if things get to a certain point. And even if he doesn't have that quote-unquote, presence of mind, that's what should happen, right? He can't just stop the show and not really know the particulars, right? So the fact that, A, you have promoters who aren't going to take the brunt of this, right? Because Live Nation owns most of the venues that do large concerts in that space. They not only own the booking agency, but they actually own the venues themselves. So they're going to be fine. But the fact that one individual can sit here and take the brunt of this and have to possibly rework his whole finances, is going to have to rework his whole recording contract and all of that, is wild, because these are things that he couldn't control. And these are things that they actually could control. And I don't want to get on no conspiracy theorist type of, you know, rant or anything, but who's to say that if you have a company that can control all of those elements, who's to say that someone isn't sent out there to wreak havoc, to, you know, do something that's beneficial in their way? You can't track that.
No, Mike, it lends itself and leads itself to a lot of doors being open on a lot of levels. One of the things that you said that struck with me, and I want to also say something too, some of those thoughts, a good portion of those thoughts that Chuck B elocuted so well, you actually said on this show when these things happen, as far as like Live Nation and the promoters and sound and stage and, you know, the other people potentially responsible, Mike. The insurance here is what's problematic for potential hip hop artists and venues moving forward, because this gives them a reason to tax us. And, you know, they're always looking for a reason to tax us.
Yes.
And so there's money right there in that, because there always is inherently, because it always costs more to insure a rap show anyway.
Yep.
You know? Like, has is inherently. So this is one of those things that makes the sticker tag go up, Mike. And it's getting so big without he's being the focal point of being ostracized. That it's like somebody big need to step in. Like Ye need to step in. Like Jay need to step in. Like somebody need to step in and like
What, hold on, let me stop you there. What is Jay-Z going to say to Live Nation? They distribute Roc Nation.
That's why you need to say something.
What can he say?
I mean, he obviously has relationships, though. That's what I'm saying.
I feel you, but I mean, I'm just not holding my breath on Jay going out there and talking down on Live Nation publicly. Because, I mean, again, what Chuck D said, it's like so many people's careers are in the hands of this company, so they're not going to say anything. They're, unfortunately, really sitting here letting Travis take this publicly by himself. When you spoke to the insurance thing, it's an interesting thing too because they already tax on insurance, and you can't, like, we couldn't even do like a, let's just say we're doing an event at a big space where it's going to be 100 people or whatever. They make you get security, they make you get insurance on the venue, right? So you're not going to be able to hold anything without insurance, and when that with that insurance, they could charge you whatever they want. But based on these things, they could sit here and tell Travis, like, look, this is what we're going to pay you a show because now we got to get five times the security. We got to get this, we got to pay for this. They could just make up stuff at this point. And I hate to say it, but Travis just kind of got to take what he can get when it comes to performing again.
So let me tell you something personally that happened to me, and that's why I spoke to the insurance, because I know how that game gets played, Mike. I used to be the event manager in Atlanta of one of the premier event spots in Atlanta, actually, Mike. And one of Atlanta's biggest party promoters I had a relationship with, and he wanted to do one of his events in the space that I managed. And I went to my bosses and I asked them, about this. I mean, and you're talking about for years, this is a guy that I'm talking about has made, hundreds of thousands of dollars for people. Like, I'm not gonna say who he is, but like he done bailed famous rappers down here out of jail, and put them on stage like the same night. You feel what I'm saying? Like, this is a guy whose rep is pretty strong. And now I know that our insurance policies, usually for our events, were usually for $10,000 to $20,000. I went to my bosses, and just because it was a black crowd, keep in mind there were no even rappers involved. It was just him having an event, which was known for having mostly a black crowd that was going to be, 21 to 40. Said they needed a $100,000 insurance policy.
It's wild, man. You
That's
know,
what my
and the
bosses
crazy
told me.
part about this though, cool, the demographics of the actual victims
Shit crazy.
ain't even the, you know what I'm saying? Like, I could see that this was a diverse show if we want to sit here and talk about, ethnic backgrounds. Like, Travis' show was a diverse show. It wasn't just 50,000 black people out there. You know what I mean?
I'm just letting you know how the game go, Mike.
Oh,
I've
definitely.
seen it live myself. The price literally got marked up 80 grand because it was us. It wasn't even no famous rapper coming. And one of the bosses literally bought up a time where another rapper was in the same space and smoked some weed. And I was like, what does that have to do with like me and this guy bringing this money? Because you have to understand, he was coming in during slow season. I'm like, you understand that him doing this event, like him doing that event X amount of times in that space, was a six-figure payoff for us.
They're basically telling you, look, man, we do what we want to do.
And we don't want your black ass in here. All right.
I was actually going to do a documentary back in the day. It was a venue in Atlanta, and I went to this venue on a night where they had more, Caucasian patrons, right? Because I went to a friend's birthday party. She had a party there, and I just knew that this, venue from a previous experience, because I went on a night where it was, mostly us, was a certain way. The door was different. Like, they weren't tripping. Like, I was like, yo, I don't have any cash on me. I was like, don't worry about it. Just go in, right? That was different. Get to the bar. The drinks are a whole different price. Same venue, same spot. Parking was half the price it was when we were out there. And, it was like, I wanted to, back in the day, I was like, man, I want to do like a piece on this where it's like I go one night and people could actually see what it was like that one night. And then when the black people were in the venue, I could actually show people what it's like on that night. But yeah, it's real. And you're talking about on the back end. I'm talking about like on the consumer end, even that's different. But again, all those things are a sliding scale. They affect each other. If If you have that person is saying they need $100,000 on, some insurance, then the promoter is gonna have to hit us over the head because it's like, look, man, it just costs more for us to be in the building.
No, and here's what's crazy about it. He was like, I got that. Let's make it happen. He had that.
He's
He
used
already knew
to
how
it.
the game was played. Like I told you, Mike, I used to bartend those parties for him. Like, I know how big he was. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there are DJs on the radio that got their start at his parties. You feel what I'm saying?
That
Like,
don't make
this
it
dude
right,
had the
though.
cachet and the cash and all that. They just didn't want us there, and they were just looking for a reason to drive up the sticker. They was just like, no, we don't want you here, so we're going to make you pay. So let's take that on a bigger scale. I'm talking about a $100,000 policy to do a party in Atlanta that probably ain't going to get more than 500 to 700 people at any point in time with it. You're talking about Travis Scott.
Right. Yeah. He's gonna get hit over the head. And what's gonna
We're gonna
happen?
need two point we're gonna need $2.5 million just to do the event.
And you know who's gonna say
in
that?
Insurance.
But you know who's gonna say that they got that? Live Nation or the label or whoever. And they're gonna be like, look, Travis, for us to be able to do this, we're gonna need you to sign
right.
this.
Right. And now we going and look, so now you're going from behind one door to behind the other door with the artist trapped in the middle. This is how the game get played.
It's really, really vicious. And that's why he's taking the brunt of this. That's why he's the face of this. Let me put it that way. Because in most of the
articles. He's taking the brunt of it. You said it right.
Yeah. Because publicly, they want it to be known that, okay, well, this is why we're doing this. This is why this happened to him. And I saw a representative of his. She's the former mayor of Baltimore. Her name slips me. But she was talking to Gayle King on Good Morning America. She's his spokesperson, Travis Scott's spokesperson, excuse me. And she was saying things like, Travis is taking full responsibility for this and blah, blah, blah. What? How is he taking full responsibility for this? He's not responsible for this. Don't say that. Don't say that about me. Like somebody said in the chat, it was like, that's like Mike Tyson taking the blame for killing somebody in the ring. It's worse than that. It's like if somebody in a Mike Tyson fight got trampled and Mike Tyson's in the ring fighting and he takes the blame for somebody getting killed out there in the audience watching him fight.
Mike, it wouldn't be surprising me if they tried to do that to Mike Tyson though, Mike. That
it's
wouldn't
insane.
Surprise me.
It
like,
is.
Mike, I mean, when people, okay, so Mike, when we say it's insane, it's like, well, we have over 400 years worth of insanity to look at to say that anything is possible now, don't we?
Oh, definitely. Okay. No, it's insane that people fall into this, I don't want to say trap, but just fall into the dialogue of like, yeah, it's his fault. Like, whoa, wait a minute. Let's look at the bigger picture
fast.
Here.
It happened fast.
It's like, come on, man. Like, really?
Why I was like, I told you, Mike, you need to lawyer up and lay low and let this play out.
But when you got lawyers like Benjamin Crump out there working against you, that's even more disappointing. Benjamin Crump's handling like 100-something cases on this. Like, come on, man.
No. There are people out there for that ass, and he needs to go acquire them.
Yeah, man.
Expeditiously.
Well, I mean, again, he comes from, well, I don't want to say comes from, but his child's mother is big in that field, or she comes from a family that's big in that field. So hopefully they work out.
Oh, this
something.
Can get this can get bankroll and he got plugs. Yeah.
But again, man, this is all spiraled out of control. You got so many people in the mix now.
You know, see, here's what I'm saying, though, is like at this point, it's like, you know, you got to. It's almost like you got to be on some day by day with it, though, Mike. Like, you got to fight this battle, like, day by day. You can't keep on looking at it from the perspective of, oh, well, I don't deserve this. That's not helping you today.
At this point, man, I feel like, and this is just my opinion, and I get it, he's big, but he got to speak for himself, man. And I think that a lot of these entertainers get to a point where they feel like they need representation on every level. Like, no, man.
No,
you need
Mike.
To start speaking for yourself,
no,
man.
No,
these
Mike,
people
Mike,
have you messed
up.
On
this level, Mike, on this level, I do not agree.
You don't?
He needs representation. And he needs to call a press conference where his attorney is going to issue a statement with him standing behind them, where the media is notified that if they have any further questions concerning this matter, can address them to his attorney, the lead attorney on the case.
This is the problem with that,
though. And then he needs to go lay low for the next 365 days.
I think that in a general, in a regular situation, I think that's what you should do. Let your representation speak for you if you're an individual entity. But when it comes to this entertainment thing, and I was talking to an artist who was telling me basically how it works. These entertainment attorneys work for the labels. They're not working for you. They're going to do whatever's in the best interest of the label because the artists come and go. They want relationships with these corporations. They want relationships with the labels. So they could be out here doing you greasy because you're expendable. You're an artist.
That's already going on, Mike.
That's what I'm saying. So at this point, man, I say save yourself. Or get some, but again, the thing is, if you go out there and get an attorney,
the best thing that he can do to, no, Mike, I want him to save himself too. And the best thing that he can do to save himself, to make sure that nothing that he says himself gets misconstrued or taken any sort of way out of context, is to lawyer the fuck up.
I feel you, but how do you know at that point that these people have your best interest at heart?
My third attorney, my first two attorneys are in litigation right now. You can talk to the third attorney on the team today.
But how do you know in those situations that they got your best interest at heart? That's the thing. Because they work for the labels.
I told you he's in a bad spot. He's behind the back door and behind the scenes of a lot of places that nobody in his position. Like, you want, your goal as an artist is to sit in the rooms and behind the scenes of places as little as possible of the places that he's about to be sitting for the next X amount of time, Mike.
I hate that, man, because, again, man, I rock with Travis's music, and he put out two dope songs, like, what was it, right before this happened? It was, like, 2 weeks ago? And, you know, I don't think we're going to get any new Travis music anytime soon, and that's unfortunate. This whole thing is going to unfold. But, yeah, shout out to Chuck D for actually speaking up from an artist's perspective, and somebody who's been a hip-hop performer for over 30 years. I think he's the best person to speak on it. They've done some of the biggest shows, you know what I'm saying? They've had some rowdy crowds.
But the issue is out of hand, Mike. Yeah. And when the issue isn't going away, the focal point sometimes needs to. That's what's best for the focal point oftentimes. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that's
because the issue's not going away. It's not going away.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know what? Since we got all the people in the room right now, we got like 63 people in the room and counting. Let's go ahead and start this versus up, man. What do you say?
Yeah. We can do that.
All right. Well, yeah, by request, man, we're going to do this Outkast and Mobb Deep mock versus. I picked 20 Outkast records. Coop picked 20 Mobb Deep records. I think this worked out well, man, because these, first of all, they're duos, right? And I think that they're flagship duos from their respected regions. And they came out around a similar time. I know people don't really look at Outkast as like a kid group. Or like they were like kids pretty much when they dropped. Same thing with, I'm saying. Same thing with Mobb Deep, Juvenile Hell. I know you probably ain't got no Juvenile Hell on your list. But yeah, these guys are young.
Yeah, I want to beat you. I'm not going to beat you with Juvenile Hell songs.
No. You know, they tried their best on that. They really came to life with the Infamous. But yes, I think this is a really good matchup because these two groups are a lot more similar than people might think. I know that,
especially in terms of what they mean to their region, Mike.
Yeah. And how early they got started, too. You know what I'm saying? And how high praise you know, half of the group gets as an individual and things like that, you know.
Right. And they're both pretty much fresh out of high school when they,
straight up. You know, that one picture of Andre Big Boy and Mr. DJ for Southern Playlistic, man, like, they look like kids where Dre got the braids and the Braves jersey. Kids. All right. Well, let's do this.
They are kids.
Yeah. Yo, so we got somebody here said Juvenile Hell is great. Okay, let's do this.
It's solid. It's just okay. It's just okay, fam. It's just okay. Hit it from the back, and like the first Shook Ones are like the highlights. The rest of it's just some mid, dude. Like, yeah.
Well, I haven't seen Coop's list for real. I just copied and pasted and put it into
Yeah, I'm just
the
looking at yours for
viewpoint
the
so
first
you can
time.
see it. And we're about to go track for track. We're probably gonna need y'all help on some of these songs. Let's just get into it, man.
Yes, the first one. We need your help on the first one.
Okay. So on the first round, we got Coop picking Mobb Deep's the infamous Mobb Deep. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh,
That's just,
that's just
yeah.
the title. I got you. I shouldn't have included
Infant.
that. All right, Survival of the Fittest and Players Ball. I got Players Ball on that.
I got Survival of the Fittest, Mike, and I love Players Ball. I think Survival of the Fittest is a better record.
What y'all got in there, man? Y'all got Survival of the Fittest or Players Ball? We're gonna call that a wash for right now. I'm gonna wait till people, you know what I'm saying,
I
get in
mean,
there. But you know what? No. Let's talk through this real quick.
hold on. I think, first of all, I think both of these songs are epic lead-off singles to epic albums. So they have that in common. I just think that Survival of the Fittest is more of a legendary East Coast hip hop classic song than Players Ball is a Southern hip hop classic song. Both of these songs are instant classic songs.
I'm seeing a lot of survival. I'm seeing a lot of
It is.
survival.
Well, here's why, Mike, because Prodigy's verse is memorable on there. And that's what I mean about this verse is why I didn't mind picking Mob. It's because, oh, I get to go through Prodigy's memorable shit. That's tough to beat. This is one of those moments.
Ah, man, looks like Survival of the Fittest
Mike,
won this.
the way he starts off, there's a war going on outside. No
Where
man
to
is safe
stay
from.
from?
You can run, but you can't hide from ever. From these streets that we done took. You walking with your head down, scared to look. You shook. Cause ain't no
No such
such things
thing
as
as halfway
halfway crooks.
crooks.
They never around when the beef cooks. It's my part of town. It's similar to Vietnam. You know, like that's classic, Mike. That's classic. Every hip hop head knows that.
Well, looks like
Every.
Survival of the Fittest won that. You know what? My actual plea for Players Ball is I feel like it was just a great introduction, great first single. It kind of got you right into Southern Playalistic and what that was. I think the hook's
No.
incredible. I think musically, it's somewhere
No.
else.
No, Mike, both of these songs did the same things for their respective classic albums because, like, Survival of the Fittest is the perfect tone for the infamous, the same way Players Ball is a perfect tone for Southern Playalistic. I just think Survival of the Fittest is a more classic record. We're just arguing between classic records and classic leadoff singles off classic albums.
Well, you know what? It looks like the people agree with you.
It is. I mean, Survival of the Fittest is whew.
So Survival of the Fittest wins that one.
And Mike, it's been sampled a whole lot, Mike. People have sampled stuff from Survival of the Fittest, you know?
Oh, this next one's hard too, man. It's hard for me.
Yeah,
The
told you,
Learning,
Mike.
Burn versus So Fresh, So Clean. I got, you
See,
know,
I
I
told
have to
you.
take my I'm trying to take my bias out of this, man, because I love
Learning
Burn
is a
though.
must.
I
Yeah,
love
learning is a
Burn.
must. You want to know what's crazy, Mike? Is that like Havoc showed out on The Learning. That's one of Havoc's best moments to me.
I mean, Noid, you know what I'm saying?
No,
Like,
Noid's crazy on there. Noid's crazy on there. Noid's the highlight of the song.
no, I think Vita's the highlight of the song.
I mean, she just brought it an energy to the hook, Mike, but it's like, yeah, when Noid's like, you don't think I live a pop life now, because
Boy,
hey,
you
you
can
can get
get
pop
popped
right
right now.
now.
Me no play. I keep a gun around my
You're living
way.
in my place
I'm a
because I'm a
fucking
fucking
drama
drama
king, like
king,
my
like my
nigga
nigga
K.
K.
Slay.
Slay.
All right, so this one seems to be
Yeah.
leaning more towards So Fresh, So Clean. What y'all got? Burn or So Fresh, So Clean?
Mike, I actually think that's probably So Fresh, So Clean too.
You
As
know,
much as I love Burn.
I have a lot to say about So Fresh, So Clean, man. Like, I feel like that's the last great Outkast song. Is that fair to say? Like
Classic,
single?
yes. Not great, not great. It's classic single, yes. It's their last classic single
What's
together,
the
yes.
last great Outkast single then?
No, that's it. As far as like classic stuff, as far as like, yeah, with them, yeah.
All right. So we 1-1 right now. I'm getting nervous, man. Hell
I
on
told you,
Earth or
man.
ATLians? I got Hell on Earth on that one, man.
Me too. Mike, I told you, like, Mobb Deep's 2030 best songs are as good as anybody's 2030 best songs. Anybody's.
Okay, I think that's an easy one. I mean, we could ask the people in the room, because I do want to keep you guys' engagement up. Make sure y'all, you know, tell a friend to join this chat, because this is actually getting really, really good.
Mike, this is another one of those records, this classic by Mobb Deep, that's been sampled a lot, most notably by Pete Rock on Rakim's The Saga Begins. The Saga Begins. Begin war. I draw first blood, be the first to set it off. Macaws, tap all jaws, lay down laws. That's Hell on Earth. That's what I mean. This is classic shit.
Hell on Earth is classic. Yeah, people are saying Hell on Earth and
Landslide.
That beat
is crazy. Mike, that
are y'all really
crazy,
telling me that Morris Brown is the last great Outkast song? That's a big boy record. So is The Way You Move. I'm talking about with both of those guys. The Whole World.
Come on, Outkast.
I never loved The Whole World, bro. I don't even think I included it on here, actually. Did I? Yeah, I left that off. I never liked The Whole World.
I wasn't big on it, Mike. It was cool. It was one of those things. It's like, okay, y'all are making music for everybody now, and that's okay too.
People say Hollywood Divorce is the last classic Outkast song. Wasn't a big fan of Hollywood Divorce either, but hey,
Hollywood Divorce is pretty dope. But don't
it ain't
consider
so fresh,
it
so
great.
Clean.
Nah. It's not great or classic. It's a really dope record, though. The Hollywood Divorce is really dope.
I think I look at it different. I look at it different, where it's like a magical Outkast record for me is just those two guys, right? And like two dope boys in a Cadillac and those moments, elevators. Like for me, a great Outkast record doesn't have to feature Snoop Dogg and Lil Wayne, man. Like that's something different.
I feel you.
All right.
No, I feel you.
So we on round four. So we got It Twisted, Get Up, Get Out. I think that's easily Get Up, Get Out.
It is. Got It Twisted was the weakest song on here. You can have that.
Keep It Thorough. And it's funny, yo. We didn't even see each other's list. We both went for, I guess, solo spots on this, but Keep It Thorough.
International Players Anthem.
International Players Anthem gets that.
What do you say?
I say International Players Anthem. All right, what do y'all say in the chat? Y'all got Keep It Thorough or International Players Anthem?
I'm actually probably going to lean towards you on there too, Mike, as much as I love Keep It Thorough, but damn.
I thought I was going to surprise you
with Keep It Thorough. I wasn't expecting that. That was a nice play by you.
Keep It Thorough is great. That beat is classic. Yeah, man. And P went in on that shit.
Yeah, it's classic rap.
All right, so people are saying Keep It Thorough, International Players Anthem, Keep It Thorough easily, Keep It Thorough, Keep It Thorough. Oh. Damn, never mind, International Players Anthem. Players Anthem, Keep It Thorough. It's back and forth, International Players Anthem.
Are we watching?
Definitely International Players Anthem. I think International's picking up steam. International, Keep It Thorough, okay. International by hair. Alchemist, yeah, I know what that answer is. All right. God Part 3.
That seems like International Players Anthem won that, but it's close.
God Part 3 and Spody Odie Dopalicious. That's Spody.
Yeah, I'll give you that, yeah.
Ooh.
I love G.O.D. Father Part 3. I do, though.
Live Nigga Rap. Live Nigga Rap and Rosa Parks.
That's Live Nigga Rap.
What?
Yeah, Live Nigga Rap's better than Rosa Parks. You know that, Mike. Oh. Mike, you're ahead. You know that. You know Live Nigga Rap's better than Rosa Parks.
Wait a minute. If this was Miss Jackson, I could say, okay. But I don't know, Mike, how do you feel about
Rosa Parks? I think Rosa Parks, along with Miss Jackson, are probably like the singles that I like the least that they've released.
I'm going to ask the people in the room real quick.
I told you we're going to ask the people about a lot of this stuff because it's a lot of classic stuff.
Okay, Live Nigga Rap or Rosa Parks? Now, this is what I got to say about Rosa Parks. I think that Rosa Parks is probably, it's obviously a super commercial single, but I think it's probably their most artistically great and lyrically dense and musically dense. Single, period. Like, even Dre's verse, I think Dre's verse on there is brilliant. Like, the approach of
breakdown. I love Rosa Parks. That's one of Dre's finest moments to me, actually, as an MC. Like, if we were pulling out his 20 greatest verses, the verse on Rosa Parks would be on there for me. But, I mean, Mike, Live Nigga Rap. Like, and I put that on there because, like, even though that's on, it was written, Mike, Havoc did the beat, and it's Havoc and Prodigy on there. And, Mike, you can't find any other rap album that's not a Nas album that has Havoc and Prodigy rapping on there with a beat by Havoc, and Live Nigga Rap is... Mike, you know
what Live Nigga Rap is, Mike. Listen, man, that's hard to... Yeah, all right. Let me go to the chat real quick.
Yeah,
we got Live Nigga Rap, Live Nigga Rap, Rosa Parks, Live Nigga Rap, Live Nigga Rap, Live Nigga Rap, Easily Stop It, Rosa Parks, right. Live Nigga Rap. Y'all crazy. I love Rosa Parks. But all right, Rosa Parks, Easily. Can't go wrong with either, but Rosa Parks. They're asking me why I didn't do Return of the Gangster. Rosa Parks is a far better song. Live Nigga Rap, no doubt. Rosa Parks. Live Nigga Rap should go against Skewered on the Barbie. Rosa's lyricism, Everybody Move Back to the Bus. Live Nigga Rap. Listen.
Watch? Are we watching?
That can be a watch because they're so different. And I feel you like if I was...
They're if so
I
was different.
Going in, and I'll put it this way, and I'll be perfectly honest. If I was going in the whip right now, I'm playing Live Nigga Rap first.
But right. If we're sitting Mike, here, you already know that.
Yeah,
it's like, Mike, you want to know what this is? This is like one of those like Randy Moss, Jerry Rice conversations. I always tell people, if you tell me Jerry Rice is the greatest receiver of all time, I'm not going to argue with you. But I'm going to tell you, if we're on a football field and we're picking players and Randy Moss and Jerry Rice are standing right next to each other, you're picking Randy Moss. And that's what Live Nigga Rap is.
But if I'm sitting there and breaking down the songs, it's like, okay, I got to go with Rosa Parks. But yeah. All right, we'll make that a watch. What round are we on? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Oh, and I want people to know, me and Mike don't look at each other's list, so the way the songs fall is just like the way the songs fall. He does his list, I do mine. We literally don't see each other's stuff really till like right before the show, and we make it a point to not really look at each other's list till we like have to do it.
Yeah, yeah, because don't nobody want to have any kind of advantages and make it, you know, unfair. Yeah. All right, so right. I don't think I even scored that. So that's a wash. We'll do, right. I'll put the washes up here and whatnot. Okay. Now we got, where we at? Still Shining and Benz or Bima. I got you Benz won. Or Bima on that. Yeah,
you won. I love Still Shining. Still Shining is one of Havoc's best beats.
Eye for an Eye, Elevators. I took out a good one on that one. I'm going Elevators on that.
Mike, I'm going Eye for an Eye, actually, Mike.
Really?
Mike, I mean, how about this?
Let me ask the people, and I want to get to what you got to say about it.
No.
Who y'all got, Eye for an Eye or Elevators?
Mike, Eye for an Eye is one of Nas's and Raekwon's best five guest verse appearances ever, and it's on the same song, and the beat is crazy. It's classic. It's one of the best posse cuts ever.
I think... If we're sitting here breaking down Andre's most notable verses, the Elevators verse is the verse.
No, Mike, you might be right, Mike, but it's Mike. I'm telling you, Mike, like, ooh.
All right, so let me go to the chat. LP says Eye for an Eye. Seymour says Eye for an Eye. Junior says Eye for an Eye. Shannon says Elevators. Terminator, he didn't give an answer. Miss Mo says, watch y'all do that, but Eye for an Eye.
Eye for an eye.
I got Eye for an Eye. Yeah, it looks like Eye for an Eye got this one.
It is, Mike. That's the first time Nas says Nas Escobar on a song, too. Yeah.
Wow. I can't believe Elevators got taken like that.
I can't believe Keep It Thorough got taken, Mike. It happened.
So we on round 9, and I want to make sure all the counts are right.
So, yeah, it's 5-3 Outkast with one wash.
5-3 Outkast with one wash. Okay, cool. I'm glad you keep me scoring too, because I think I missed something. All right, so the next one we got Drink the Pain Away and Southern Playalistic. I mean, I'm going Southern Playalistic on that.
I'm going to give you Southern Playalistic on that too, Mike. I actually thought Southern Playalistic was a better song than Players Ball, and I still do. And I think the staying power of Southern Playalistic is better too.
You know what? I agree with you on that. I think it's one of the best second singles ever.
I think it's one of the best second singles ever because it could have been and should have been the first single. That hook really is like beautiful. You know how I feel. it's a beautiful record.
I mean, I think the only reason why it wasn't the first single is the fact that Players Ball was just out. You know what I'm saying? It was already out on the Christmas
Players
album.
Players Ball was a Christmas song, right?
So, like, Southern Play Illicit to me is like hasn't real. Been made yet.
No, Mike, I still play, Mike, when it gets hot in Atlanta, like, that's one of the first songs I play. I let the sunroof back and I cut Southern Play Illicit on and I start,
Such a beautiful record. I really wish I could have put Crumbling Herb on here. I really wish that
you didn't put Crumbling Herb on here.
I didn't. I'm bugging. I should. You know what? I got Miss Jackson on here. I should have put Crumbling Herb on here instead of Miss Jackson.
Yeah, you messed up majorly.
That's one that I messed up on, and I wish I could have put Funky Ride on here too.
You couldn't do Funky Ride and Spodeyoti Dopealicious, Mike.
I wanted to put Liberation on here too, but
I was thinking about Liberation, Mike. Liberation would have been a nice way to end.
No, I wanted to end with Power. Okay, this is the one I was afraid of. Dang, I Shot Your Remix, Skew It on the Barbie. Well,
I Shot Your Remix, Mike.
Damn, man.
Go ahead and ask the people, even though you know what time it is. You know what P's verse is on there. That's what I'm saying. P's a monster, man.
What do y'all think? I Shot Your Remix or Skew It on the Barbie? So P's verse is better than Find the Common Denominator, the nigga numerator. Never know who to hate a nigga's catered to your ego. I'm sorry, like a tiger who's a cousin to Calico. This in Puerto Rico, back on the street like Chico. The bar, she large and got a lack in the garage.
Mike, once again, we have bars by Prodigy so legendary that a famous MC and producer took them and sampled them and made another classic record. This is the verse where Jay-Z and Primo pulled the evils from, Mike. Yeah. Illuminati with my mind, soul, and my body. Secret society trying to keep their eye on me. But I'ma stay incognito in places they can't find me. Strategically make moves, the G-O-D is sort of similar but iller than a chess player.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting blown out right now in the chat, man. Everybody's saying I shot you.
Everybody know what time it is.
Okay.
So do you, Mike.
Nightmare Vultures and Two Dope Boys.
I love Nighttime Vultures, but that's probably Two Dope Boys.
Yeah. From the bottom of my lungs, a nigga be blowing, spitting this game. Coming up on you from the south, the ATLians ain't changed. Woo! I love how Big Boy came through on that shit. That's one of my favorite beats on that whole album. What a great sample, too, by the way.
Mike, I'm so mad at you about this next one. I just looked at it because I just knew I was about to win this record.
Give Up the Goods and Akumina? Yeah, that's Akumina.
Don't say it like it's that easy.
I mean, you know.
Don't say that like it's easy.
Q-Tip's my man, you know what I'm saying? That was a great beat by Q-Tip. Great beat by Q-Tip, but, you know.
Mike, that's a great song. That's another classic hip-hop record.
It is. It's a great record. I love that sample. They killed that track because, what was that, Pink Cookies in the Plastic Bag? That was first, right? But yeah, they came back and, yeah, that shit's hard. Give Up the Goods is great. But Akumina is the title track to one of the greatest hip-hop albums ever. And
No. I think Akumina is one of Outkast's 5 best songs probably. So
people are picking Give Up the Goods in the chat, though.
That's not surprising to me, Mike, because it's more of a hip-hop based song. That's what I'm saying. Like with Mobb Deep, you're getting a lot of classic hip-hop stuff. That's what the heads gravitate towards. And Mike, I'm going to tell you this, Mike.
You're more likely,
and you probably more likely to jump in the ride and put on Give Up the Goods than Akumina too, Mike.
You might be right.
Get the money, no time, no cash. I'm caught up in the hustle with the guns go blast. The fool retaliated, so I had to think fast. Pull out his heat first, he pulled out his heat last. But who the fuck you think is living till this day? Trying to tell these young niggas crime don't pay. They look at me and say, Queens niggas don't play. Do your thing, I do mine, stick and stay out of my way. It's like hard trying to survive in New York State, but can't stop till I'm eating off a platinum plate. Po-po come around and try to relocate me. Lock me up forever, but they can't deflate me because having cash is highly addictive, especially when you're used to having money to live with.
All right, hold on, Coop. It looks like we got outvoted. I mean, because everybody in the chat said.
Oh, did we get outvoted? I'm glad we might have got outvoted.
Yeah,
by
we got
something.
Outvoted.
I told you that's classic.
So, yeah, we got to be fair. People pick Give Up the Good. So.
According to Hip Hop's for the People. So it's 7-5 with a wash.
Yeah, 7-5 with a wash right now. Yeah, Akumina and I got
Mike,
beat.
You're in a little bit of trouble, Mike, because my ending is super strong. You're in a little bit of trouble. Telling you in trouble.
Drop a gem on them in Dirty South.
Whoa. I'm gonna let the people decide again. I told you we was gonna ask the people about a lot of this stuff because I knew this was gonna happen.
Reggie said Coop trying to get a record deal.
No. I got offered a couple of those ones.
All right, let me ask y'all in the room, man. Is it gonna be Drop a Gem on them or Dirty South? Damn. That's rough, man.
Mike, to be honest with you, I don't know how to feel about that. I think Drop a Gem on Them is like probably the most underrated diss record ever. And it's the only guys that actually made a diss record about Pac. And it was actually a great record. And they put it on their album. And Mike, it was kind of the start of putting diss records at the start of your album because it's the second track on Hell on Earth.
You know, people are picking Drop a Gem on Them.
I mean, I'm going to roll with whatever the people say on this because I love both of those records, but Drop a Gem is pretty special. Mike, that's one of Havoc's best verses, too.
Yeah.
Like Havoc Match P on there.
Yeah, people are saying Drop a Gem on them. Dang.
I told you you're in trouble.
Leo Manning said Drop a Gem on them. Come on, Mike. let's not act like it ain't close, man. Dirty South is very impactful, man. But
no, Dirty South, I mean, the song Dirty South coined a whole phraseology down here. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
a whole it wasn't called
the Dirty South before that record. Yeah, a whole subgenre got created from that record. But I mean, just record for record, you know, you could go either way. That's why I said we'll lean on the people.
All right, we'll lean on the people. So we're looking at 7-6 Outkast right now with a wash. Damn, man. Streets Raised Me and Miss Jackson. Miss Jackson is Miss Jackson, though. Do we have the... Because I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 left. And you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 left. You're missing a song, Coop.
I'm missing a song?
Yeah. Because I think I counted the infamous Mobb Deep because it looked like you got like 19 here because you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Let's go to my original list because I had to edit some songs. I had to cut some songs out, Mike.
19. Yeah, you got 19 songs.
Mike, that's fine. That's fine. Can slide plenty of songs in. You got shit to choose from.
Where you gonna slide? Are you gonna slide it at the end or where you gonna put it?
I mean, Mike, no. We can, hold on. What do I have on the list?
You have to put it next then. Let's just put it next so it's fair.
Oh, that's fine. The Realist with Cool G Rap.
All right. The Realist with Cool G Rap. And that's going to go against gangster shit.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me go to the people. What y'all think when it comes to Streets Raise Me versus Miss Jackson? All right. Yeah. Terminator says Miss Jackson. We got Streets Raise Me. Streets Raise Me, Miss Jackson, Miss Jackson, Miss Jackson.
Fascinating.
Yeah, Miss Jackson.
I think Miss Jackson's probably going to win that. Miss Jackson,
yeah. Miss Jackson ruled summer 2001, someone says. All right.
Almost to a fault.
Yeah. Okay. Miss Jackson gets that one. And so what did you say was the one you were putting in there with Cool G Rap?
I'm going to put The Realist in.
The Realist. Okay.
I was picking between I'm Going Out and The Realist, but I think I like The Realist more. It's more of a Mobb Deep record.
All right. I wish I could just write it in here so people who are seeing the rebroadcast can see it, but Coop is actually putting in The Realist with Cool G Rap in the next spot because he has 19 songs. So is it going to be The Realist?
That's my bad.
No, it's all good. Is it going to be The Realist featuring Cool G Rap or Gangsta Shit? What you got on that one?
Mike, low key, I love Gangsta Shit. That's actually one of my favorite Outkast records. I love Big Boy's delivery and how he sets that record off.
You know, it's funny you say that. Everybody always talks about Dre on there. I think Big Boy got the best verse on there.
It's Big Boy because Big Boy came with the lyrics and the delivery and he set it off. He kind of set a tone too.
Yeah, you know, UTKASTOMPGOODIE. So fresh. Yeah, he was just, yo, Big Boy's flow on Stankonia was crazy.
That's what I mean. Like his flow pattern and delivery on there, like on top of the lyrics, it's like, no, he was the one that was crazy on there.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, Andre's a scene stealer. It's just like, you know, like, is David Ruffin a better singer than Eddie Kendricks? It's like, I don't know. But I mean, damn, she'll take him the mic live in front of him, though. You know what I'm saying?
Outkast with a K. Yeah, that niggas are hard. Well, people are picking the realest. People are picking the realest at Kool G Rap alone. Okay.
Yeah, I told you, Mike. Yeah.
Alchemist
That's one
Classic.
of Hey, Mike, that's one of Kool G Rap's best verses. That's saying a lot.
I'm glad to hear people are saying the Big Boy had the best verse because people never said that when
Did.
it came out. But I'm glad, you
No,
know.
that's the Dre infatuation over actually like listening to the music bar for bar.
Right. Nah, Big Boy killed that joint. I liked Slim Cutter Calhoun's verse too. And
Yeah,
I
Mike.
want to say a real big piece about gangster shit, even though it looks like the realest is going to win this. I always felt like T.I.'s Dope Boys in the Trap came from C-Bone's verse on there.
Right.
Where he's like, Dope Boys from the Trap, like stack the
Like a
dough.
stack of dough. When
Yeah.
beef come around, can't let it go.
Yeah. Too bad Jacuzzi bad. Killed
Yeah.
it. I don't
Yeah. No,
know,
that
man. I
whole
hate
song,
to see
Mike,
this
that
one.
whole song. I mean, Mike, that's one of the best Dungeon Family collaborations. That's what I mean. I love that record. But the real that's what I mean. Mobb Deep
Yeah.
has that classic hip hop stuff like that. They got Kool G Rap spitting over that crazy, like I think it's like another Scarface sample loop. And he's just going crazy on there.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, man,
That's
it's
tough,
hard
man.
to
That's tough to
ignore.
go
Yeah, it's
against,
hard to
man.
ignore. Yeah. So it's
Well,
what? It's 8-7 with a wash. Is
eight
that
seven
where
with
we're
a
at?
wash. 8-7 with a wash, and we
Mike,
got
you're in trouble.
temperatures rising in Jazzy Bell.
Told you you're in trouble, Mike. It's only getting worse from here. It's only getting worse for you from here. You definitely should have picked Return of the Gangsta and Crumbling Herb. Definitely, it's all bad. What do the people say about
All
temperatures
right, what
rising?
y'all got? Temperatures rising or Jazzy Bell? I got Jazzy Bell.
I might pick Jazzy Bell, Mike. And I'm saying that because how about this? I love both of those albums. I love both of those records, but neither one of those songs for me are even one of the five best songs on either one of those albums. And still some of their best stuff.
You know, I one of my favorite parts about Jazzy Bell is when Dre goes in on the last verse and kind of takes on Cujo's style. I thought that was so dope. And he was like, "Me on a girl in that black on black Latino star." I'm like, that is so dope. But people are picking
Yeah.
temperatures rising. Jazzy Bell is my shit. Temperatures rising. Temperatures rising. All right, we got to be fair. We got to go with the people. I'm in trouble right now.
Mike, you're in big trouble, Mike. I haven't played Mobb Deep's two biggest songs. You're in lots of
Darren
trouble for that reason.
Harris says Jazzy Bell is better. Yeah, it is what it is, man. Looks like we're 8-8.
With a wash, Mike, you're in trouble.
All right, it's
Trouble.
mine and the artist storytelling part one.
You're in trouble. You're in trouble. I told you I could
Listen,
pick a Mobb Deep
man.
playlist.
Listen, man. I
Told you
don't.
I could pick a Mobb Deep playlist, Mike. It's
I don't
cold.
know, man. I don't
They're
know.
cold. They're
But hold on,
2030
hold
song. Their
on.
2030 best
You're
songs
the
are as good as
person.
anybody.
You're the person that was saying that you would pick Artist Storytelling over Bonita Applebaum. Right? So you're
No,
not
Mike.
saying
Mike,
so.
we gonna know, Mike. We're letting the people pick this one because, Mike, the last two. I'm gonna tell you exactly how I feel, no matter what two records are sitting on the Outkast song. Like, and this is. And so, can I say something about Mobb Deep right quick?
What's
Mobb
that?
Deep is special.
Mobb
Mobb
Deep
Deep
is
has the
special.
firepower to go against the Tribe, to go against the Outkast. You're looking at it.
You
They're that
know,
great.
people are picking It's Mine.
Mike, it's pretty
Okay.
great record, Mike.
People are picking It's Mine over the Artist Storytelling. You know, this is very eye-opening too. You know, like you said, Mobb Deep. They got haymakers, man, and
Mobb Deep special.
we look at Outkast as, you know, untouchable, and they're clearly getting touched. And I don't think that
Mike.
I just did a bad job of picking songs. You know what I mean? Like, and the
No,
one
but
song
Mike,
that I didn't want to pick actually won.
Mike, I told you that Mobb Deep has better singles than Outkast. You're seeing the proof. Look
I
at it,
think
Mike.
Tribe
Hell on
does
Earth,
too. I think
it's
Tribe does
mine.
too.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so Quiet Storm and Hootie Who. I mean, that's Quiet Storm. I don't even think we need to go to the people on that. And Shook Ones Part Two and Bombs Over Baghdad. Honestly,
Good night,
man.
Mike. Good night, Mike.
Yeah.
You can't even make an argument for Bonds over Baghdad.
I can't.
You can't.
I can't.
You can't.
I can't. You can't.
Mobb Deep is great.
So, you know,
they're all top three.
These are some things that I do want to go through, though, all right, because this ended up being.
But hold on, Mike, and I want to say this, like Mobb Deep won this, but all of these songs were close and like pick 'em. So that's what I mean about how special Mobb Deep is. It really just depends on how you feel. Our audience feels like these records were stronger. I kind of tend to feel that way too, because part of the reason why I feel like Outkast is the greatest group of all time is because I don't think there's anybody that has 50 songs that match them. There are some who have 30, and Mobb Deep is one of them.
I don't want to miss the super chats, man. Shout out to LP. He just sent us $10. He said, great stuff, y'all, keeping me sane while I'm in this Bay traffic. You know, for everybody else who's listening in the car, we're on streaming platforms too. So if you're listening to, you know, your podcast on iTunes or Apple Music or whatever, or Spotify, you can look up According to Hip Hop Live on that too and check out previous episodes. But yeah, let's break this down a little bit, because I didn't think I was going to lose down like this. All right, let's look at it in totality. I'm going to pull the list back up. It looked like Mobb Deep, based on the people mostly, won this 11-8 with there being one wash. So I want to make sure we got all our numbers right. Yeah, that's 9, that's 20. Boom. I think what surprised me, I think the Players Ball surprised me. Players Ball losing to Survival of the Fittest. Mm-hmm. I think the Elevators, Eye for an Eye, that's surprising.
That's a wash for me. That's a wash for me, actually, when I were to think about it. That's what I mean when I say it's close.
And Akuminai and Give Up the Goods, surprising, too.
That could be a wash for me, too. I would probably lean on Akuminai slightly over Give Up the Goods. But, Mike, that's what I mean. It's like when you hear that beat and then Prodigy starts going in, it's special. Prodigy has a lot of epic rap moments. He has a lot of type of shit that you remember forever. He has the type of stuff that other great rappers and producers go and quote. So it plays into that. When you got to go up against it live, it's just different. I mean, Mike, you got to look at it. Mobb Deep is considered to be a hardcore group, but 9 of the 20 songs that I picked were singles.
You know,
they got great singles.
I hope that Havoc is watching this, because, you know, we do need Mobb Deep in one of these verses. They definitely deserve it. They made some of the biggest hip hop songs of its era. And maybe not on a commercial level, but you know what I'm saying, on a street level. Francisco Rodriguez says, Mike, what about Everlasting? I love Everlasting, but I don't think people know that record like that.
I don't think Everlasting would have made it on here, though, Mike.
Yeah, Sitting in the Bathtub, Listen to the Isley, Brothers and Others, I sound like no one to despise.
See, but this is what I'm saying. Okay, so listen to what I'm saying, Mike.
Yeah,
Everlasting is one of those songs why I think Outkast is the greatest group of all time, because that's one of those songs. It's like that's one of their 35 to 50 best songs. And it's like when you get the other cats 35 to 50 best songs, they don't have stuff like Everlasting in there. But in those first 20 to 30 songs, Mike, Tribe, Mobb Deep,
no, Dayla,
Wu-Tang. No, they got stuff that's comparable, if not better, than Outkast. It's that 50-song pack that makes me say that Outkast is the greatest group of all time, because I feel like they got 50 songs. You can go 50 songs deep on them, and you can't fuck with them last 15, 20 songs they got the way that you can with the first 30.
The struggle I think there is with Cast, and I think we talked about this before, is the fact that Outkast non-singles are their strongest songs. But their singles, Mike, are so big. You know what I'm saying? So the singles,
Mike,
are huge,
I'm gonna tell you something.
But the non-singles are actually the better songs. Like, Spody doesn't even have a video.
So can I tell you something? It's like, you missed a lot of stuff, but that's the hard thing to read with Outkast album, because it's, Mike, I was surprised you didn't put Over the Woods on there. I know you and I both love Over the Woods dearly. Yeah, that's a top 20 Outkast record to me.
I love Over the Woods. Big Boy went crazy on there, but I will say this.
Mike,
I think that
Ain't No Thing.
I thought about Ain't No Thing. I did. I thought about it. But again, what it is the fact that Outkast singles are so big, I would have to leave off a big single for a song that wasn't.
No, Mike, and that's why they're the greatest group of all time to me, because when you get into the whole catalog, it's like, oh no, they got something everywhere, but just that 20-30, yeah. It's like, no, other groups have done that. Yeah, Mobb Deep's one of them. Not a lot, not many groups, but
Reggie keeps asking why I didn't put Peaches and Cream on there. You talking about mainstream?
Mainstream, yeah, he is talking about mainstream.
Yeah, I was like, he's the great 112.
No, because you want to know what mainstream on of their run, mainstream is probably the weakest Dungeon Family posse cut of the run. Like, Thought Process is better, Dirty South is better, Y'all Scared is better. Like literally every other record is better than mainstream.
I thought about Thought Process too. My choice was Thought Process or Dirty South, really.
And I would have went with Thought Process, actually. That's what I mean. Outkast got stuff everywhere. But yeah, Mobb Deep is special, man.
As an outcast, I was born, wasn't worn from the harm that would come to meet me like MetLife. But yeah, life done sent me through a lot of ups and downs, and it ain't nothing. Like elevators.
But I ain't the one that's pushing the buttons.
I got off at
the 13th. That's where elevators came from, Mike.
Incredible, man. Incredible stuff. But yeah, man, good job picking the Mobb Deep. I mean, I knew I was going against Mobb Deep, I was like, okay, I got to hit them with some hits because I know Cass hits are just bigger than Mobb hits.
But not I don't better
feel,
necessarily.
No, not better necessarily, but I just didn't feel like I could have beat Mobb Deep on the B-side. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I would have went more B-side stuff with Cass, I don't think Cass's non-singles beat Mobb's non-singles, if that makes any sense.
So here's what's so special about Mobb Deep. They made B-side stuff, A-side classic stuff.
Exactly.
Like stuff like Give Up the Goods was a single. Survival of the Fittest is a single. It sounds kind of B-side-ish. They made it so classic that it was like, nah, like that's us. Like they made it A-side. And
no,
so
definitely.
It's like, that's what I mean. That's what I was telling you. It's like, well, no, Mike, their singles are better because it's like, nah, Survival of the Fittest, classic. Give Up the Goods, classic. Shook Ones Part 2, classic. Quiet Storm, classic. Hell on Earth, classic. It ain't just dope. It ain't just great for the times. These are classic singles.
Man,
that was
fun, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I think that was probably the most fun that we had doing one.
Yeah, actually. I think that was probably the best mock verses that we've done. Which one should we do next?
Oh, dude, I don't even know.
I'm sure the fans will think of something. Yeah, let us know what mock verses y'all want us to
do. Let them pick the next one too.
Yeah. Let us know what mock verses y'all want us to do next, and let us know who y'all want to get, who y'all want to cover each artist. Excuse me. Yeah. So speaking of which, and maybe this is somebody that we could throw in the mix too, because I know you had a lot to say about this new Snoop album, Algorithm. And to talk about Snoop's career in general, Snoop just released, I guess, his first Def Jam album. Snoop has a position over at Def Jam. I don't want to get the position wrong, so I'll just say he has a position over there. And they're crediting Snoop for signing Benny the Butcher to Def Jam as well. But in the midst of all of that, Snoop was able to put out his first Def Jam release, and it's called Snoop Dogg Presents Algorithm. And look, it kind of reads like a compilation, a playlist, however you want to do it. But yeah, Snoop put together this in a Quincy Jones style. What were your thoughts after listening to the album?
After listening to it the first time, I was like, well, this is the type of playlist you want like Apple or Tidal or Spotify to put together for you, but they never do because they can't get shit right this long. This is one of the best compilations that I've heard in a long time, Mike.
Yeah.
One of the best compilations I've heard in a long time. I can't remember the last time I heard a compilation this good.
Look, Snoop really did a great job of putting this together.
Excellent job.
And let you know how in tune he is with music still. And, you know, never left. And like I was telling you offline, I've always felt like Snoop is kind of like a Boosie Collins or George Clinton of this era of hip hop, where it's like he's always embraced the younger artists, the youth, the youthful sounds. He's always messed around with a lot of different sounds too, because he came in the game on some gangster rap funk shit with, you know, being under Dre and all of that. But he's always kind of kept that up. Who was that artist that he had? What's her name? And if people in the chat might know, was it Michelle Williams or something like that, who was on All Around the World on the Blueprint 2 on Jay-Z's song?
Oh, I know who you're I can't remember her name.
Yeah.
Offhand.
So he's always been able to be around great talent too, you know what I'm saying? And I think this compilation really brings all of that in full circle. Everybody that was on the compilation, I mean, they sound great on the records they were on. It started off with the Redman and Method Man, you know, collaboration, which I thought was dope. I just felt I love the whole vibe of the thing. For the people in the room, what was y'all favorite song on there? Because people are listing out some songs right now. Yeah, LaToya, yeah, so that was her name, LaToya Williams.
So, Mike, I want to say a couple things. First of all, it's like Snoop did a masterful job on this album because he wore a lot of different hats on this project, obviously, and he wore them all well. He's kind of like the DJ, the orchestrator. He's the architect, and sometimes he's the MC and collaborator on here. And every hat he wears on here, he wears very well. This album plays extremely well, Mike. Like, you spoke to something. You know what stuck out to me? There's a lot of talent on here.
Mm-hmm.
The people on here are talented, Mike.
And they sound good.
And it was refreshing to hear talent that I wasn't familiar with. And I kept finding myself going back. Like, you know, I'm listening while I'm doing different things. And I kept on having to go back. I'm like, who is that?
Exactly.
Oh, I'm like, okay. Like, I haven't done that about an album in a minute, especially a compilation. The Malaya chick is dope, Mike. Mm-hmm. Inspiration and Anxiety are both really strong records. I enjoy both of those records a whole lot. The album has great sequencing. You spoke to it, Mike, behind the scenes. Snoop still has his pulse on the music. This compilation is proof of that. If he really is like the architect and behind the scenes and put this together, which it appears he did.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized something, Mike, and this goes back to the Benny conversation we were having. We were like, excuse me, what does Def Jam benefit? What does Benny benefit from signing with Def Jam? And when I listened to this album, Mike, a lot of thoughts were occurring to me, and I'm like, Snoop is why it makes sense, Mike, because nobody in this culture can bring people together or call people at the drop of the dime and get them in the room the way Snoop can. And that's why Def Jam wanted them. And that probably is why Benny is saying, no, Snoop had a lot to do with that, because I thought about it, Mike. He's letting you know how strong he is on the first track, Mike. The album starts off with Redman. Redman had problems with Def Jam last time check, with about how he was treated walking out the door. You feel what I'm saying? So just the fact that the album is starting off with Redman rapping on a Def Jam-based compilation, it speaks to the power of Snoop and everybody and how they gravitate towards him. And so now Snoop being a part of Def Jam makes more sense, and Benny being part of Def Jam makes more sense. Because here's one thing that I think we forgot, and this is why I want to talk about Snoop's catalog some. Oh, Snoop got it like that, and Ben had it like that, and we forgot.
And you know what? It's interesting you say that, because I didn't even think we were going to have that part of the conversation today. But yeah, you're right. We questioned last episode, like, what does Def Jam add to what Benny has going on? But you're right. When you listen to the sequencing of what Snoop was able to do with this compilation, those are some of the things that we were saying that Benny was missing in relation to his counterparts in Conway and West Side Gun. Like, he hasn't been able to put together an effort like a Pray for Paris or an effort like, you know, From a King to a God, sequence-wise, feature-wise, production-wise. And based on what we're seeing here with Snoop, with the help of Def Jam, Snoop, and Benny coming together for that, that actually may happen in a real, real big way. So that probably was more of a musical decision than a financial decision, where we always seem to look at record deals as financial decisions.
No, Mike, I'm glad you said that, because one thing I thought about it is like, well, if Snoop putting projects together like this now and doing sequencing like this, a la his original mentor, Dr. Dre, oh, that makes me more excited about hearing Benny's project if Snoop is going to have his pulse on it and be adding something to it and listening to it and being there for some of the process. So now some of it starts to make more sense. And the quality of this album gives you more reason as somebody who's a fan of Benny to be excited about him being signed to Def Jam. I got a few more musical notes,
because okay, I wanted cool, to give like LP says something I want to address too. He said that, you know, Snoop is a Def Jam fan. Yeah, and it shows in the album cover where he has the Warren G plaque on the wall, he has the EPMD plaque on the wall, it was Public Enemy plaque on the wall, and it was also a Slick Rick plaque on the wall. I think that it's highly noted that Snoop is very influenced by, you know, Slick Rick and his style and the way that he approached hip-hop music. And, you know, coming from the era of hip-hop that Snoop comes from, you can't not be a Def Jam fan. And the fact that he's been able to do this whole thing full circle from the West Coast and go to Def Jam and kind of, you know, control the climate and bring it back in a sense, I think is really dope. And this compilation really, you know, set the tone for that and let people know that this just wasn't a a PR move by Def Jam. This is a real serious thing.
Right. And so here's what I mean about great sequencing and song structure and where it matters, Mike. I mean, the highlight of this album might be Big Subwoofer, right? I think Subwoofer is the highlight of the album.
Let me pull up. I'm pulling up the track list right
And there's now. A lot of highlights. But I just felt like, like 40, Cube, In Short, and Snoop all came off on that record well to me.
I really enjoyed hearing all of them together. Yeah.
I enjoyed hearing them together. It's like they had fun doing it, even if they weren't together. But here's what I mean about sequence and song structure. So that's a West Coast record, Mike. Mm-hmm. Immediately, the next song is the East Coast record with Benny, Kiss, and Buster. He's giving you balance.
Yeah.
And there's never too much hip-hop in a row. There's never too much R&B in a row. He's switching it up. Been Through by Hey Dion is dope. By and by Jane Hancock. Jane Hancock is dope too. Like her records on here. I thought By and By was the best one. Diamond Life with Mary. Make It Last. I took a note, Mike. I put Make It Last is the R&B soul music that I used to go to Jhené Aiko for.
Mm.
That kind of toxic R&B.
London was on here too, because he was another person that I've always given Snoop credit for, you know what I'm saying, introducing me to. Snoop's always been around really good artists. But what were you about to say? I'm sorry.
I mean, the only drawback to this album to me are like the last few tracks. It did lose a little steam at the end. I felt like no Smut on My Name and Get My Money is kind of just like okay compared to the other records coming before it. But Mike, there's stuff everywhere, man. Like New Oldies dope, Make Some Money's dope, Go to War.
You know, I think that Snoop as an artist and being around so many different sounds in his career, and we were going to speak to his catalog. I know we had that conversation earlier, but when you look at how diverse that his catalog has been throughout his career and how he's been able to change with the times, and you know the fact that he made Rhythm and Gangsta with the Neptunes and with you know other producers and all of that, I think he's taken all of this stuff in and really has learned as it's kind of like a player, right? Like, I was out there on the court. I played for a bunch of different systems. Now it's time for me to sit in the background and be a coach and utilize all of the things that I've learned throughout my illustrious career and my incredible catalog and apply them to other people, because he's always been a great collaborator. And I think of all the people that we talk about with great catalogs, I think he's probably been the best collaborator. I know we give Jay-Z a lot of credit for being a great collaborator, but is he a better collaborator than Snoop?
No.
I don't think so. Because when Snoop got on that Mariah Carey Say Something song that Neptunes did, he fit right in that song like he was, you know what I mean? Like it was one.
Here's why, Mike. He came into the game having to fit in. It used to be Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg the first couple of years of his career. So he had to learn about teamwork very early, Mike. I mean, he was, you know, working with the DOC and Dr. Dre and the Dog Pound and Warren G. So, I mean, he came into the game working under teamwork and understanding what teamwork meant. He just had star capability and star power and hit-making ability. So him stepping out to his own was never a problem. But he understood those things very early on because that's how he came into the game. So that's what I mean when you're talking about he's a better collaborator. It's like, is anybody a better collaborator than the dude that made Deep Cover and Nothing But a G? You get what I'm saying?
No, you're like, right. No. And these are collaboration songs. So yeah, you're right. It's hard to put it.
He made his name on collaborations. That's what I'm saying.
No, you're right. And you got the best director in hip-hop and Dr. Dre and his best subject, so you know, for lack of a better term, in Snoop Dogg. And Snoop is, you know, he's quietly... Without, you know, people saying, okay, I signed the Snoop Dogg, signed the Snoop Dogg. He's quietly been around great new talent, really, for the past 20 years. And we haven't really given any credence to it. You know what I mean? Because you look at somebody like October London. Like, I heard him on, I want to say maybe a project that Snoop did about 4 or 5 years ago. But I'm like, this guy sounds like Sam Cooke or something. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's awesome, man.
So, and Mike, and this is what I mean. It's like, you know, we haven't sung Snoop's praises enough about his catalog, actually, because not saying it's like a top five catalog, because I don't think that it's that. But Snoop's made a lot of great stuff, Mike. Like, I was going through the non-doggy style hits. And I was like, man, 90% of the rappers would kill to have made these records that never were on Doggy Style. And I realized something, too. Doggy Style gets a lot of Illmatic treatment. Snoop gets a lot of Illmatic treatment because of Doggy Style. Like, Doggy Style is so big and so massive and so important that it's like we kind of downplay some of the other stuff. Mike, I'm going to list Snoop's hit records that aren't on Doggy Style and tell me if this doesn't sound like a Hall of Fame rap career.
No
Doggy Style records, Mike. Bitch Please.
Mm-hmm.
Snoop Dogg with Timberland. Lay Low.
I didn't like that record. Me
from the Church to the Palace. Beautiful. Drop It Like It's Hot. Let's Get Blown. Vato. That's That Shit. Boss Life. I Want to Fuck with Akon. Mike, most rappers would kill. Those are 11 hit records, Mike. Yeah. Most rappers don't even have 11 hit records. We're not even talking about Doggy Style. And Mike, that's not even like the albums. Like you and I were talking today. It's like Rhythm and Gangster and the Blue Carpet Treatment are great albums, Mike.
I love Rhythm and Gangster. I listen to Rhythm and Gangster from beginning to end. Like, you know, it starts off with the Alchemist track, you know, with the gospel sample. Yeah.
Right, so let's talk about Rhythm and Gangster. I love to give you light. Mike, that's a great record. Mike, Bang Out. Can I Get a Flick with You? Bang Out's one of Snoop's best songs. Mike, Ups and Downs is one of Snoop's best songs. The Business.
Yeah.
Step Your Game Up's on Rhythm and Gangster.
I like that record too.
Mike, we didn't even bring up Mike, on the Blue Carpet Treatment. Crazy. Mike, the intro to the Blue Carpet Treatment, think about it, is one of Snoop's five best lyrical performances. Vato, Candy with E-40.
I like that record too.
Imagine with Dr. Dre and D'Angelo.
Classic.
Mike, Pimp Slap, where he's dishing Shug on Paid the Cost to Be the Boss.
Yeah.
Long Beach to Brick City with Redman. Mike, Everywhere. Buckham with Buckham off of Top Dog, the Dre track with Fredro, I think, from Onyx. No, with Sticky Fingers from Onyx.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, this is the non-Doggy Style stuff.
M. Lynette says Rhythm and Gangsta is my favorite Snoop album. I've heard people say that. Rhythm and Gangsta has a dope feel to it, and I think that, you know, this compilation, it kind of speaks to, you know, how in sync he is even with R&B soul type of, you know, vibes. And he was able to do that on Rhythm and Gangsta. I think that might have been the first time that we saw him do that on a big level. Because, like, songs like Never Leave You with LaToya Williams, like...
Rhythm and Gangsta is where he grew up but still knew how to, like, keep it street. And so it was a beautiful balance and blend. You could tell Snoop was more grown, but you could tell he was still, like, had his ear to the street. The Pharrell collabs, I mean, I feel like him and Pharrell make the best collaborations. I feel like that's Pharrell's best collaborator as far as hip-hop artists.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, as far as like, you know, as far as like a producer and an MC getting together, you know, like you have those combos. Like, I feel like Timberland's best combo was Jay-Z. I feel like Pharrell's best combo was Snoop.
Timberland's is Missy, but yeah, I know what you mean.
No. See, that's what I mean. I'm not necessarily talking about in your camp. That's what I mean. It's like people really stepping out to collaborate. You know what I'm saying? Because you know how I feel about like the clip shit with Pharrell. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. And you know what? I like Pharrell and Busta too. And I think it's more of an energy
Snoop's
thing.
Snoop's better though. Huh. It is. I mean, Busta don't have no Beautiful or Drop It Like It's Hot. I'm sorry, not with Pharrell.
They don't have Pastor Gavarsier. They'll have.
That's not touching Beautiful or Drop It Like It's Hot. That's Beautiful's what I'm saying. If Pastor Cavassier is their peak, then that's still a bronze medal compared to Drop It Like It's Hot and Beautiful.
I think you're right. So where do you put Snoop's catalog all together? Like, who do you think Snoop should have done a versus with? Because we saw what happened in the DMX. Was the DMX the best versus matchup for Snoop?
Okay, Mike, so I want you to understand, I just named all these Snoop records. I didn't name any Doggy Style records. Oh, but you know what else I didn't name, Mike? That means I didn't name any Chronic or Chronic 2001 records. Don't nobody want that smoke?
Yeah.
Don't nobody want this smoke? That's what I'm saying.
I know. I was saying this when it happened. I said what Snoop played tonight or, you know, during that versus, I was like, I don't think Jay-Z would have beat him.
So, Mike, so when we were asking, like, who would beat LL in a versus? This is the guy. Yeah. This is the guy. Yeah, that's the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's that guy.
That stuff is tough.
Think about it. I just named 10 hit records not on Doggy Style, which means he could go with those 10, and then he could start dipping into Doggy Style and the Chronic 2001. You're not going to win.
Jermaine Young says Jay-Z and Pharrell greater than Snoop and Pharrell. I think I'm going to agree with that, too.
Where's the beautiful in the Drop It Like It's Hot at?
They got to give it to me.
Like I said, where's the beautiful in the Drop It Like It's Hot at? Keep giving me these records that are a level below. I think Give It To Me is
better than both of those. I think Give It To Me is better than both of those. Beautiful is debatable.
Say what?
Beautiful is debatable, but I think Give It To Me is better than Drop It Like It's Hot.
Mike.
What about La La La? Did they got a collaboration like that?
I'll give you La 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 over Give It To Me. Give you La 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 over Give It To Me.
Give It To Me is a banger. It might be the Jay-Z song that has the most legs.
I mean, Mike, how about this? If Snoop doesn't make Doggy Style, like Drop It Like It's Hot, Beautiful are his biggest played records. Like, I hear Beautiful more than I hear Give It To Me.
Do you?
Don't you?
I don't know about that.
Mike, Drop It Like It's Hot still plays in the club. Give It To Me still playing in the club.
Give It To Me does. That it's about to go down. What about Allure?
No, Mike. That part of the song plays, Mike. Drop It Like It's Hot still plays.
Nah. I mean, it does, but Give It To Me does,
Mike,
too.
No, Mike, it does.
I don't think you're giving Give It To Me enough credit.
They let Pharrell and Snoop get through their parts before the DJ mix some other shit. Not just the it's about to go down part.
Everybody knows that's not playing the record.
Transitioning the mix on a live set. It's not playing the record.
I always hear that beat. They'll go into it. When the Remy's in the system, ain't no telling when I go, well, I did some nuts when I be yelling. I think that's one
it's
of
not
his...
Drop It Like It's Hot. It's not Drop It Like It's Hot or Beautiful. I'm sorry. Like, what do the people say?
Well, DeCarlo says, facts, Mike. M. Lynn says, Give It To Me is not better than Drop It Like It's Hot.
It's not.
Shannon Williams says, Allure. That's another one, man. They got joints together. But I will give it to Snoop and Pharrell. They've actually made a lot more music together than Pharrell and Jay did.
A lot of hits. They got a lot of stuff.
All right, before we get up out of here, man, I know we were going to talk about that Ray and Ghostface Drink Champs interview, but nobody seems to be able to access it. So we hadn't seen it yet. We just seen a couple of previews, so we might end up talking about it Wednesday when everybody's seen it. But, you know, I did see that, you know, they're going to be talking about, I guess, some things that we've never heard. I think Ghostface was telling a story about how they were able to make amends with Biggie the day before, you know, he was murdered in the club and all that stuff. So,
Mike, that's great. Supreme Clientele 2, Purple Tape 3.
I was going to ask you, what do you hope to get from this Drink Champs interview?
I just told you what I want. I want to hear about Supreme Clientele 2, the Purple Tape 3. I want to hear what's going on, who's doing the production, who they're thinking about collaborating with. Ray and Ghost are always entertaining and, you know, going to have some colorful stories for you, of course. So I expect it to be like, I mean, how about this? It's hard to follow up. Yay. This is an appropriate yay follow up because you got some guys who are legendary, iconic, and big enough in stature and personality that they don't mind coming after something like that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They're like, shit, I'm Ray and Ghost. You know what I mean? Like, people love us.
I think the thing for me is, you know, people have been in the game so long and, you know, we've heard and seen so many interviews. It's like, I'm not sure what we're going to hear that we haven't heard, but again, people feel very comfortable with Nori, and I'm sure they got individual stories because they're sitting down with one of their peers. So so it should be interesting. I'm looking forward to it. I don't think we're going to get like any. Do you want to hear another Wu-Tang album? How do you feel about that?
Old Dirty Bastard's not here. I'm just ambivalent about it. Like, I don't think people understand how key he was to the feel and the grittiness that's on Enter the Wu-Tang. Like, you can't replace a guy like that. And also, too, Mike, it's just when you're growing up and you're a teenager and you're seeing that run that they had, that's the best run ever. It's like there is a large part of me that is like would rather remember them in that run
Let's leave it there.
Yeah, I'd rather them leave it there because they're all still got their solo material and endeavors and all that cracking. It's like, I'm cool if they leave it there because they actually provided us with enough classic material, unlike Outkast, to be happy with their placement of it to the point that they got whole Hulu shows being made about them. Like, I'm cool if they never get in the booth and put together another Wu-Tang album.
Yeah, because like, what they did was magic, man. I mean, you said unlike Outkast, you want to see another Outkast album?
I mean, because I feel like they still left us wanting something more. I don't feel like Wu-Tang left us wanting with everything. They kind of emptied the chamber a lot. And like in a good way, they gave us what they had to give. And it was all-time great. I'm cool with it.
I've heard Andre say before that, you know, it's they've always felt like, or he always felt like they were making music under the gun in a sense where nobody was expecting anything from them. So it was easier to make it from that place. But now that there's expectations, then, you know, it's harder to create. And I think it's interesting you say leave it there. I think he wants to leave it there, but it still feels incomplete.
So let's speak to that comment right there. And I don't necessarily care for it. And I'm going to tell you why. Well, you usually tend to get measured in other spheres of entertainment, in sports, in competitive nature, by those moments.
By the adverse moments. The flu game.
By the adverse moments. Like, Mike, you know exactly where I was going. It's like, it's not just that Mike won. It's like how he won. It's who he beat. He beat a lot of people in their prime.
Right.
You know? It's the circumstances of it that's part of it. You know? It's the fact that if you look at a lot of the teams that Mike played against, it's like, well, after you got done with Mike and Scotty, a lot of the time, like Mike and Scotty were usually two of the three best players on the floor, but a lot of those teams they played in the finals, the fourth, fifth, sixth best player was on the other team. Go look at the 93 Suns roster. Go look at the 93 Suns roster. Like, the best players on the court are Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, Scottie Pippen in that order. The next four players are the Phoenix Suns.
You know what's so interesting about Andre 3000 to me is, you know, for somebody, because, you know, growing up in Atlanta and, you know, seeing Outkast in their prime and at the height of their powers and, you know, how he was able to dress all wild in the 90s when nobody was doing that. And he seemed so confident in that, and I saw that as like, yo, man, this dude is really dope. You can go out here and just be who you want to be as long as you're great at what you're doing. And to ultimately see that he doesn't have that kind of confidence is wild.
Hold on, Mike, I'm going to go to something. You were talking about John Stockton. Why did you say that he was better than Steph? You bought up the pressure, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you said, no, I done seen John Stockton hit a game-winning shot to win a series in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Under pressure. You said, I haven't seen Steph do that. What? Under pressure.
Yeah.
And thereby you separated some because of what one man did under pressure that you saw him perform and succeed at the highest level at, as opposed to a man that you feel like hasn't.
Well, you know, and to take that into hip-hop terms, right? I think even Jay-Z's performance on the Blueprint 2 album and the Black album, that's actually operating under pressure after Ether, right? What Nas did on Ether in Stillmatic, that's operating under pressure, you know? And those are things that push you above the fray. And I hate that in hip-hop, we give more credence to people who walk away from that and just we want to remember everything good. And so no one holds that to task when considering the greats. And again, I'm not slamming down on Andre because he's never said he's one of the greats in this and that and the third or whatever. That's what the people are saying. And he is. No. He's done great things.
No, he is. Yeah.
But
no, Mike, you're right, Mike. I mean, Mike, you kind of spoke to it, Mike. I don't think anybody was under the pressure MC-wise that Nas was under before Ether came out. No rapper had ever been put to the fire like that was legendary. Like, a lot of the respect that he has from the modern day MC is because of how he responded. Mike, let's go back a generation, Mike. LL Cool J before he made Mama Said Knock You Out, Mike.
Yeah. I was going to go there, rap. Too. Yeah.
Mike, for me, still to this day, like, LL, like, that's his career-defining moment for me. Because the pressure was on, and he responded.
I mean, let's look at Ghostface, right?
Epic work.
Let's look at Ghostface on Supreme Clientele. That was he was serving some time. You know what I'm saying? They were coming off of,
he was dying. His health was in jeopardy.
Yeah.
He was sick.
Yeah.
He was sick and in and out of jail.
So as much as I love Dre and I love Cass, I don't like that statement, honestly. You know, and again, it's, and shout out to Big Boy who's continuously making music. And hopefully the Big Sleepover comes, in any week now because they're out there performing these on Jimmy Fallon. But yeah, I mean, it's odd though. Again, someone that seemed so confident and comfortable in their own skin with the blonde wigs and all that stuff seems to not have that confidence in their ability. And I just think that's wild. But that's
literally,
I think that's why
MCs we've ever heard.
I think that's why I don't feel like we're ever going to get another Outkast effort, because I don't feel like he's up for that challenge. And I'll even say that about Tribe, right? Before Fife died, because that album was in the works anyway. They were up for the challenge of making another Tribe album.
That's saying a lot.
That says a lot. That takes
their
a lot.
Their legacy had been cemented. Their legacy had been cemented.
They didn't have to do that.
They didn't
and
have
I'm
to
not
do
saying
nothing.
That, Cass owes us any albums or anything like that, but if you're up for the challenge, this is the biggest challenge to show that, you can make a dope album, because we're dope artists, we're dope musicians at whatever age we're at. But I think that's another thing that, Dre fears too, is just looking like the old person on the mic. But I thought the hip hop had gotten past that.
So, and maybe that's just me because I'm competitive. Like, when I say Outkast is the best group of all time, it's because I don't see any other four albums as strong from any other group. Even if the albums are great, I don't think they're as great as. Like, Outkast, fourth best album, is better than whatever your best group's is, fourth best album. But, Mike, a fifth album would have ended that conversation, and that was my thing about them doing it. You feel me?
A fifth album right now. Because honestly, if we want to keep it 100, and we just got to keep it real, and I know we want to pick and choose, Outta Wild is technically their last album. Do you really want to end on that note? Like, it's just what it is. Like, it's billed as an Outkast album. It's a soundtrack.
That sound like that. That's really the song Skipping and Slowing Down, like he talking about on Rosa Parks, if that's the case.
Right. But, I don't know. I don't know. It's, again, when you look at music and the scope of their musical peers, if you're just talking about hip hop or if you're just talking about music in general, you were talking last week about Stevie Wonder's album in the 90s. Like, he knew that he wasn't, songs in the key of life Stevie, but he made the album anyway.
But he was also Stevie. That's what I mean. He was like 13 years removed from songs in the key of life.
Right.
And that was like, and songs in the key of life is like towards the end of his run, not in the middle. Like, he had been removed from it, but he was still out there putting in work and people still loved it because it was still Stevie. I told you, my mom still went and bought the tape.
All right, man, it's 5:30. I know we got to get up out of here in a second.
One more thing. You want to talk about the Gibbs and Kiss record right quick?
Yeah, let's talk about the Gibbs and Kiss record. It was fire. What else?
It's fire. Mike, I was actually about to say, on to some dudes who actually want to rap and love to rap.
Yeah, man.
So you want to know what my takeaway from the record?
Go ahead.
What?
Possible Song of the Year nominee or something?
Mike, get out my head. I was like, this is one of the best rap records this year.
Yeah, Black Illuminati is strong.
Mike, you can go ahead and put it down now. This is making our top 20 rap songs of the year. That was my thought. I was like, oh, this is making the yearbook.
Okay. I hate to be like this because everybody, does so much stuff together. They sound so good together. I wouldn't mind hearing them do like a little EP together.
Wouldn't mind hearing 5 or 6 tracks by The Alchemist.
Oh,
wouldn't mind that at all. But here's what I'll tell you, Mike. Here's what my overall take was outside of that, though. I said this record is very Lemon-like, as in when Conway and Method Man got together for Lemon last year. It's a tone setter. He went and picked the legend who he respects and loves, who's still active and great, and they made a great record together. That's one of the best songs of the year, just like Conway and Meth did last year with Lemon. And so this makes me get excited for Gibbs' project the same way Conway got me excited about his project with Lemon, because it's one of those things. Not only is the record great, but he knows his audience. He's sticking to his audience and his guns. Fuck that happy shit.
You know what? I wanted to ask you this, man. I mean, even though he didn't drop anything this year, is Jadakiss possibly MC of the Year or Lyricist of the Year or something? Because what Jadakiss has done in this year is interesting, and it's hard to even say anything.
We're gonna have to give Kiss all jokes aside, Mike. We just gonna have to give Kiss a whole page in the yearbook just talking about like what he is and who he means to the game. Because here's what I realized when I was like, because I watched the video and played it up on my TV while I was listening to it while I was getting ready for the show, and I was like, man, I was like, this dude has not changed since I first heard him in 1997.
It's crazy.
Yeah. He has not changed. And I mean that in a great way, as in like, and when you really think about it, it's like, man, he's been on everybody's shit.
His consistency has pushed him past a lot of people who
it's remarkable.
Who catapulted, you know, above him initially. But his consistency has pushed him past people.
Mike, because he's still spitting bars as strong as he was 20 years ago when you call him for 16.
Yeah.
You can call him for 16 like it's 97 or like it's 07 or like it's 17. You can call kids for 16. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. 97, 07, 17. You can get those 16 from Kiss.
It's hard to compare him to anybody in any sport. No, that's what I mean.
We're just
anything.
Going to give him his own page. We just got, like, I don't know how to classify it anymore because, like.
Leo Manning said Jadakiss is the 2001, I'm sorry, not 2001, 2021 MVP.
He might be Raps MVP. Mike, he's just, you know, it's beautiful to see him get these flowers like this. It is.
And not only is he getting the flowers, but he's living up to it whenever he's called on, like he always has.
He's, I mean, like Tony, I said this Glenn during last year's show. I said this during last year's show. His calling card might be, and I think that it is. It's like, no, this is the best 16 bar verse performer ever.
Mm. All right, like, before we get up out of here, I know we're 2 hours in, and it's so much that we had to cover today. Did you hear about Drake reportedly pulling out his song from French Montana's album due to Astroworld? You know, I'm just gonna say this.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
I'm gonna say this. I think that's unfortunate that, you know, we know that French Montana's efforts or his collaborations with, you know, Drake, they always chart high. Like, if we look at French Montana's, like, if you search him on Apple Music or whatever streaming platform you have, all of the Drake collaborations go first. So I'm sure that. However,
everybody's Drake collaborations go like that. When you pull up Wayne and Ross shit, it does it. And that's even with all their hits, his stuff be popping up like in the top 10.
You know, I don't understand what it really correlates to. Like, what does Astroworld or whatever's going on with that? What does that have to do with you being on this person's album that they kind of expected you to be on there? Like, what? What does one have to do with the other?
See, this is what happens when the machine controls you, though. It's like, you know, just because you know, that's the machine at work. You know, I really don't know how else to parse my words other than that.
Well, I hate that for French Montana, man, because again, when you center the rollout around something or around possible a collaboration that was already on your track list, because he put that out, I want to say maybe a week or two ago when he was announcing the album. And
I feel like it's been 3 weeks now.
Yeah, it might have been 3 weeks now. And you don't have that, and it's like a person pulls out days before your album release, and it's like, that's kind of whack.
I mean, I told you, Mike, I would never record with him again.
I don't think I would either, because again, I can't depend on you at this point. You know, you could just pull the rug under me whenever possible.
Right. We're going to get in the elevator together. I'm going to smile, shake hands and stuff. And then we're going to get off the elevator. I'm not going to fuck with you no more.
Because, again, that's like somebody, let's just say, you know, I'm promoting a concert or something. And, you know, I'm selling tickets. And one of the reasons why I'm able to sell tickets is because I got you on the flyer. And people know that you're going to be there. And you tell me 2 days before that, well, I'm not going to be there. Not going to compensate anything or the ticket, you know, buyers or any of that stuff. I can't do a show with you no more. Like, you know what I'm saying? That's You put me in a bad situation.
This is what I mean about this is the machine at work. This is the machine at on both sides. This is Drake making business decisions based on the machine. But this is also French Montana that's crafted out a career based on a lot of guest appearances and being involved in the machine. And that's what I'm talking about. When you're part of the machine, the machine can burn you. And so I'm going to finish this off by saying that's why I love groups like Mobb Deep, because Mobb Deep made classic shit. Like, Mike, I told you, it's like you can't even go find Mobb Deep like getting on tracks together outside of like dudes from Queens. Like, if it's not LL or Nas, they're not even really working with you. But they do great work within their own camp and within themselves, and you can lean on that. And so French Montana has made a career where he's leaned on a lot of guest appearances, and now it's biting him a little bit. That's the machine at work on both sides.
You're right. 100%. I think that's a good way to leave it. All right. Well, we're going to check out this Raekwon and Ghost Drink Champs, and we'll probably talk about that Wednesday. Probably talk about even more than that Wednesday because so much happened so fast. I don't know, man. Thanksgiving is coming up, so maybe we won't talk Wednesday. So we'll talk amongst ourselves and see what works. Before Thanksgiving. We'll work something out for you guys.
We'll work something out. We'll work a schedule out.
We'll work something out for the people. But until then, make sure you go to According to Hip Hop on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel if you hadn't already subscribed and click the bell icon so you can know that when we're on live. And I'll make sure I put in the community section where we're going to go live next. And yeah, man, that was fun today, bro.
Yeah, it was good. I had fun.
All right. Y'all have a great weekend. Have a safe weekend and enjoy your Thanksgiving festivities.